you ready for competitive farming? Well then, let's get ready to tractor! We're mowing through this and more in the week's gaming news, starting right now on the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Forge Lounge Radio.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet, and welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio Live tonight with episode number 761 of our show for this January the 27th of 2019. My name is Rob Roberts, and joining me here in studio, Techmaster Loki's back.
Hey, I'm back.
Hey, good to have you back.
Yes, it's good to be back.
So what I know a lot of people want to know about is the kind of conclusion to the Broccoli Farm saga, because you told the kids, now, for those that are new to Orange Lounge Radio, you had talked a few weeks ago about how you'd planned this trip to Disneyland a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Right? And but you told the kids you were going to be taking them to the Broccoli Farm.
Right.
And you didn't tell them Christmas Day. You didn't tell them on Hanukkah. You didn't even tell them on the car ride down, did you?
No. Well, no. We told them that they weren't going to a Broccoli Farm.
Okay.
But we just didn't.
This is all why Loki wasn't here last week. So if you watched last week's show, you saw Alan was here. Dar Sakhar was in the studio, but you weren't because you were finally taking the big Broccoli Farm trip.
Yes, so we didn't tell them where they're going. In fact, we actually got to the place we were going, to the place we were staying. We didn't tell them, and they went upstairs and like put their stuff away. And then finally we had them come downstairs, and there was it was like a – not an envelope, but there was like a picture or like – they had set up something for my son's birthday, you know, basically, oh. You know, saying, you know, hey, I hope you guys have fun and stuff like that. Happy birthday. And so we were asking him, like, so where is it that you think you're going? You know, we're not going to a Broccoli Farm. So where is it that we're going? And they're like, I don't know. My wife's like, well, look around the room. Look around. What do you see? You know, where do you think that you are right now? And so they saw, like, some of the Disneyland stuff.
Knott's Berry Farm?
They don't know what Knott's Berry Farm is. Come on.
Nobody does. Nobody.
So we're going to Disneyland. So they, you know, they got pretty excited about. Actually, mildly excited. I don't know if they were like super excited. Like, you know, we have it recorded.
Yeah, I was going to say your wife posted a video. I didn't want to share the video because that's your personal business.
Oh, I'm not care. Gonna, yeah.
Yeah, but but what I was watching the video and I'm sorry, I'm just a little distracted because Smush just walked into the studio. I don't know what he's doing tonight. He's looking for the plug. He's probably going to unplug it. Oh, boy. All right. Well, anyway, so I saw the video, and my favorite part of the video was that, yeah, you know, the boys are like, you know, they're kind of excited for a minute, and then your oldest kind of goes, yeah, but what about the toilet? And then it cuts off because I guess I don't know if there was something with the bathroom or what the deal was.
Because he had used the bathroom, and the toilet was still running for some reason.
It's just one of those, like, the water. Sometimes you don't push the handle all the way.
It stuck running a lot. But that was apparently very distracting for him. But, no, they had fun. And it was funny because, like, we were trying to get them ready for bed, and then they started launching fireworks for their nightly show. And so, you know, they got to see that the first day, which was
cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah.
Okay. Great. So the family have – I know we are a video game podcast. I promise we're going to get to games, but – you know, this is the conclusion of a weeks long saga here. Did the kids have a good time at Disneyland?
Yeah, they had a great time at Disneyland.
A dumb question, right?
Yeah, Josh went on like all of the roller coasters and stuff. My youngest son Danny was a little bit more cautious. He went on Thunder Mountain once, and then we took him on it again the second time at night. And it's harder to see the turns at night, so he didn't like it.
So Danny got your feelings on roller coasters.
Yeah, I got over my fear of roller coasters pretty quick.
Was
after
there anything you wouldn't ride?
I went on Thunder Mountain a few times, and I got to do Star Tours. See, the first time I went on Star Tours, or the only time I went on Star Tours, was like back when the original Star Tours opened, and so that made me
Pee-wee Herman.
That made me pretty motion sick, you know, the first time. But the new Star Tours is pretty awesome. You don't get motion sick in that, and it's awesome. And so that was my youngest son's favorite ride, was going on that. So we went on Star Tours like 5 or 6 times.
Did you go? I would say the craziest ride there is California. Incredible Coaster or whatever.
Incredible Coaster, yeah.
Did you go on
my
that?
Wife went on that.
Okay, but
I didn't go on that.
Okay. We'll give for her.
Because I'm like.
You saw the loop. You saw the loop. And you're
no,
like,
it's not not the loop. It's just how fast it goes. I'm like, I probably could do it, but I just don't want to.
Did you do the Radiator Springs, the cars?
Oh, yeah. See, we tricked our youngest son because he didn't want it. He's like, is this as fast as Thunder Mountain? I'm like, no, it's not as fast. And I'm looking at it, it zooms by. I'm like, this is much faster.
You're tricking the child and yourself.
This is much faster. No, I was like, I thought it would be fine, but like, it went pretty fast. So like, I was trying to tell him like, yeah, it'll be fine. He's like, is it going to go fast now?
We were driving faster down the freeway.
Exactly. We were driving faster down the freeway, but no, and there was a bit of drama. So like, we had 3 days and we were coming home and he gets car sick. And so he throws up in the car. So that was fun. And it's just because he was doing like his tablet and stuff while he was in the car. So, yeah. Which is weird though, because he did it all the way down. But I don't know, for some reason, something was bothering him. But yeah, we had a lot of fun. We ate at they had food trucks down in downtown Disney a few times. So we ate the dumpling food truck a few times.
Oh, yeah, because probably the food truck's probably cheaper than most of the stuff that's in the parks.
Yeah, a lot of it. Oh, God. Yeah, character breakfast. Don't recommend that. It's. All right. It's way too damn expensive.
Look, we could do a full Disney podcast, but it is a video game podcast. Let me ask this real quick, though, before we get into the kickoff topic for tonight. Did you get to do any gaming at Disney?
No,
did you find any arcades? I didn't.
Was it the Starcade or whatever they call it?
Yeah, under
it closes space, huh? At 4:30. So anytime I got over to Tomorrowland, it was already closed.
Wow. I wonder why so early.
I don't know, but it closes, I think, at 4:30. Every time I got there, the doors were closed. The neon sign's still there, but the doors were closed.
Yeah, the neon sign's kind of iconic, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if it was open earlier in the morning. No. I didn't notice it, but I didn't get a chance to actually go there and do that. And they also had, like, some VR. It was not really, like, it's VR, but it's VR with, like, wireless backpacks and everything. And it's almost, like, not sort of like laser tag, but not. You're just playing, I guess, against the computer or something like that, but you're basically free to move around like a whole arena type thing. So they have that with like Star Wars and something else. I wanted to try that, but I didn't get a chance to do that. And I also didn't get a chance to, because we were just getting back too late each night to go down to round one to play anything. So,
oh, bummer.
I couldn't do
family it. Family was more important, so I'm glad you guys had a good trip. All right, real quick, though, because it got brought up in our chat room, because we do tape live at Twitch TV every Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf Show at the VOG Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VOG Network. And by the way, guys, pour one out for the radio feed. If it's not gone as of now, it's going to be gone tomorrow. The official cancellation went through. So it's all about Twitch and the continued distribution of our other shows that we network with through their various podcast feed. But pour one out for the radio feed tonight, guys. We are, of course, it's all about Twitch now for the live stuff, which is over at our Twitch.tv/VOG Network, VOG Network, the Voice of Geeks Network.
Yeah.
So big question we're getting in the chat, Space Mountain. Did you brave that one? Can't see that one.
I didn't go on Space Mountain. My oldest son and my wife did, though. I've been on Space Mountain before, so that was fine. Because my youngest son wouldn't go on anything, I was stuck going on there. And my wife's like, well, you sure you want, you can go on with, Josh, or I can, but she likes roller coasters more than I do. So I'm like, you just go. I'll just stay here with him and I'll go on whatever he wants to go on. So we went on, Winnie the Pooh, and we went on Star Tours like a bunch of times, but like,
all right, cool.
And that was fine. But yeah, I mean, she went on Matterhorn, and to give you an idea how long it's been, like when I went on Matterhorn last time, it was like you had to pretty much sit in each other's laps as you go in there. Now it's all completely different.
Yeah, no, they made it single rider.
Yeah, so it's all right.
We're going down the Disneyland path again.
Sorry.
It's all right. I could talk about Disneyland for 3 hours too, but we do want to get into some gaming tonight.
Well, we'll switch to the food then, because Dole Whip, fucking awesome. Love Dole Whips.
Yeah, no.
And then
you get the bacon one that's limited time?
They didn't have that there, but they also had the food is a lot better there from what I remember, because before it used to be like the same shit in every single like spot. No, they always have just like burgers and whatever, but now it's actually pretty good. Then the ice cream place.
All right. Well, since you're talking about entertainment, it does kind of tie into our kickoff topic tonight. I got to admit, I feel like overall it's been a little bit of a slower news week, so I don't have something that's like a deep dive on an actual like gaming topic. But it is, but it's not like about a game, a specific game or an event or something.
Yeah.
It's more kind of about where the industry is at, a kind of a state of the industry sort of thing, because there's an article that went out this last week that actually came from Variety. Variety is a little bit more of a magazine that focuses – well, it's – what is newspaper, magazine. It's like a weekly publication. Of course, they have the online presence as well. And I'm sure Bobby's already talking in chat. He was quoted, or he was identified in Variety once. Yes, an article there. But all that aside, they're usually more focused on like the movie industry. They talk about like that's end of the entertainment industry. I'm sure they're talking about what's going on TV and things like that. With that being the Oscars season, they talk a lot about that. A lot of the movie studios that actually want to run those four-year consideration campaigns on why A Star Is Born should win Best Picture or Glenn Close should win Best Actress or whatever. I'm barely following it this year. But those ads run in Variety because a lot of trade people from the entertainment industry that do that magazine. So the whole reason I'm setting that up is because Variety ran a pretty big piece on gaming this week and the state of the gaming industry. So they ran an article with the headline, Americans spent more than $43 billion, with a B, on video games in 2018. Now, this all ties into now that we're getting towards the end of January, we're getting our couple weeks delayed numbers from December from the NPD group and all that, right?
Yeah.
And I think we have a story later on about some of those specific sales, but we can kind of talk in general about what, you know, those results are saying is that the gaming industry, if you didn't already know, is a pretty big deal.
Wow, $43 billion. So I guess we don't need to do any more loot boxes or anything, right?
No, well,
because they've made enough money, right?
Some of that might have come from loot boxes. Anyway, it is a record-breaking $43.4 billion in revenue that they made in 2018. That is through the Entertainment Software Association and the NPD Group. That is a 18% growth from $36.9 billion in 2017. So put those two numbers side by side. I mean, I know you joke about loot boxes, but love them or hate them, that's probably part of it.
Well, and it's only going to get worse, and here's why. Because, you know, this type of growth is not sustainable. And so this is where you get, you know, the next year we're going to have layoffs, and you're going to see more of this bullshit that they're going to try to monetize things, like, every which way, because they're trying to sustain that growth, which is just not sustainable.
Well, let's see. Let's continue on some of the places that these numbers come from. Hardware revenue was up 15%, so there's that. I mean, you could attribute some of that to Nintendo Switch and the success there and so forth. Software sales, physical and digital, in-game purchases, subscriptions, 18% growth. A comment from President and CEO Stanley Pierre Lewis of the ESA. The impressive economic growth of the industry announced today parallels the growth of the industry in mainstream American culture. Across the nation, we count people of all backgrounds and stages of life among our most passionate video game players and fans. Interactive entertainment stands today as the most influential form of entertainment in America. So with that quote, kind of attributing a lot of that growth to, hey, it's not just a teenage boys in their basement type of thing anymore. It never really was. I know we all know that. But now it's, you know, much more mainstream with men, women, young, older, everything. And yes, Gen X too. There's all those articles about millennials versus baby boomers. But yes, Gen X too is playing video games as well. So everybody's playing video games is really a big part of that. So, of course, 2018, record-setting year. There was another quote here I want to make sure we talk about too, which is mobile games. The number of mobile game players in North America, an increase of 5% over the prior year. This is the number they report. Of the 283.1 million mobile users in the U.S. and Canada, 210.9 million are gamers. Another quote from games industry analyst with the NPD Group, Matt Piscatella. Mobile gaming reviews have continued to grow in the U.S. and Canada, and it now represents the largest segment within the gaming marketplace. 60% of Americans and Canadians play mobile games because of the rich library of content available. Mobile games such as Candy Crush Saga, Clash of Clans. I almost said Cash of Clans, but that
would still be accurate.
Yes. Pokemon Go, which, you know, obviously we talked a little bit about that game here on the show before. Roblox. I always forget what a big game Roblox is.
It
has a huge game. Tons of kids, especially like tweens, I guess, maybe. Like in that kind of like maybe just a little older from where your kids are at, but younger than like 18 too. I think Roblox is like really big with that set. This is what I've heard. I have friends that are like, yeah, my kids play it.
Yeah, my kids play it.
Do they play Roblox?
My oldest son plays it.
Okay, so then right about in that area. Fortnite, of course, and
he also plays that.
Probably a big one to attribute to a lot of
I swear to God, when we do get him on the show eventually, and it's going to happen again, the dude, he is fucking flossing all of the goddamn time.
And not his teeth.
All of the time. Just flossing, like, all, just, like, randomly just, I'm bored, I'm going to start flossing. Just all of the time.
And no, I'm not doing it again.
And I have pictures too. Like we took pictures.
Okay, save those for the yearbook when he's
18. Took a picture. I should have taken video, but we took a picture when we were waiting for my wife to go on the Incredicoaster. They had, you know, Mr. Incredible there, and so, you know, they took pictures with him. And what's he start doing? He starts flossing. Again, I'm like, why are you doing that? Maybe the kid's, I don't know.
Maybe the kid's gonna be a dancer. I don't know. Anyway, all right. Anyway, so Slotomania, the other one, I don't even know what the hell that is. But anyway, among many others are examples of the breadth and depth of engaging experiences available on mobile platforms. So it is interesting to note that they didn't talk about loot boxes there. They really,
of course not.
It seems like in here, what I'm kind of getting from this article is that, and maybe your interpretation is different, but what I'm kind of getting from that is that they are attributing a lot of this growth to the fact that more people are playing games at the end of the day. More people that own mobile phones are playing games because you've got these mobile games that are just getting bigger and bigger between Pokemon Go and Fortnite, Roblox, everything I just named there, and more is really causing that industry to grow.
Right. Yeah.
So, and I mean, so the gaming industry is, you know, it's interesting because you and I remember in our lifetimes when the gaming industry was a very, like, niche thing. People didn't talk about game streaming. People past a certain age usually didn't understand what video gaming was all about unless they were, like, in the industry that made them. Now, we're talking about an industry that is getting very competitive with, if not exceeding in some ways, the movie industry. I don't know how much the movie industry
I'm
made
pretty
last
sure
year.
It has exceeded the movie industry.
I think it has in some metrics, maybe not in others, but, I mean, that's – I'll let Variety Magazine hammer out those specifics. The reality is, as an art form, gaming is on a level certainly with movies. And, you know, everybody knows what a movie is. Everybody knows what a TV show is. Heck, you know, I noticed that our numbers for people watching on Twitch tonight probably a little bit lower, and that's because – and that's fine. But that's probably because of, like, TV stuff, because you've got the – and don't go switching the channel, but you got the Rent Live thing going on, which, you know, traditional TV in some ways is super hurting. Not to get too much on a tangent, but traditional TV networks like your ABC, CBS, NBC, and all that stuff is hurting a lot because of gaming, right? Because more people are turning to gaming for their entertainment, right? That's part of
right.
Fortnite, things like that. And certainly cable. There's so many cable networks. There's that kind of in between, things like Twitch. And what you're doing right now by participating with our show, you're opting instead to watch Twitch and us, thank you for that, by the way, as opposed to watching Rent Live or the SAG Awards, I think, are tonight, or I think there's a big baseball game going on. There's a variety of those.
Eh, those award shows, honestly, folks, I mean, I know. Just wait for the next day when they clip all the good stuff out and you know, have your list of winners. Do you really need to watch the whole thing live?
That's how I feel, but then when it comes to things like sports, like even though I don't watch sports, I totally understand why other people want to be there live. But my point was is that a lot of, like, the old school networks are really making their, like, where they're going now to kind of compete with streaming and that other stuff. You get this huge focus on live stuff. I think that's why you're seeing more musicals that are being done in prime time. Like, you know, you've got the Rent thing going on tonight. Although, plot twist, I hear it's not actually live. They ended up running a tape. They ran the dress rehearsal as if it's live because one of the lead actors, like, rolled his ankle earlier today.
No, make him do it with the rolled ankle.
We're
doing it live. It's going to be live.
That's why I thought you had understudies, but that's a whole nother – fine. They're running the dress rehearsal instead. So there's all that. But then, like, things like, you know, like the Celebrity Big Brother and those stuff, you know, that's more live stuff. And sports, like, it's very hard to compete with sports because sports is, you know, also like a live presentation and all that. And many people get very excited about the sports stuff still. So
yeah.
It's just – I don't know, it's just interesting to see, like, these things growing while these other industries that probably thought they were going to be around forever are, like, having to adapt or die. I think there's a very distinct possibility within our lifetimes, the next, you know, before we're, like, too old, but I would say before Medicare, before we're 65, I would say there's a really good chance NBC, CBS, ABC, or Fox, one of them goes under.
Nah.
Completely transforms from what we know it as today. Like, maybe goes completely online and there's no more broadcast TV. I don't know. But that's a whole other thing.
Not going to be ABC.
Who knows? Could be anything. So, and I guess, you know, one other thing it should be worth saying, one other thing that I think these networks do pretty decently is local coverage. Like, you know, even though our show is based in Sacramento, we're not really like we're not focused on that. We're a worldwide gaming show, so we talk about gaming everywhere, so that we can get listeners from all different parts of the globe. But that's not maybe the same outlook that TV networks have on it.
Also, I don't pay attention enough to what's going on in our area, anyways. Actually, I was thinking about that the other day. I was like driving by Golfland, and I was like, I wonder if there's any other arcades out here. You know, because I remember before, like, we used to go try to scout arcades, like, oh, which one has like this mix of DDR, you know, the play and stuff. And now it's like, I don't even know. I know where there is an arcade. I couldn't tell you which ones have DDR in them.
Well, I could tell you off air. I don't want to get into local talk.
Right. So I'm just saying. Yeah.
For 99.9% of listeners, they don't care where the DDR machines are here. Yeah. Right. In your garage. That's the one you need to know about.
Exactly.
Going to our chat over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Questbuster in chat says, even Netflix admitted that one of their biggest competitors was Fortnite. And, you know, but the bubble's going to burst on Fortnite someday.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's always that kind of like game darling that seems to like be all what the mainstream is all about and obsessed with. And then eventually it just kind of fades for the next big thing. Like, I kind of feel like not everybody's going to agree, and that's fine. Maybe a voice in chat if you strongly disagree. But, like, I kind of feel like Minecraft – I don't say Minecraft's dead. I'm not saying Minecraft's dead. But Minecraft peaked. Like, Minecraft is not where it was a couple years ago before Fortnite. You know, Five Nights at Freddy, you know, with all the stuff that they sell at Target and all those stores. You know, again, I kind of think the fever pitch of that kind of peaked a little while ago. It might come back with the movie, or if, you know, the guy decides to release a new game or something.
I do want to see a movie. I don't really care for the series, but a movie.
I think a movie would be awesome. Yeah, it would be. I'd love to see that. But anyway, and then Bobby Blackwell says it was Minecraft before Fortnite. And then what before Minecraft? I can't even remember that far back. Maybe. I don't know if there was a game. Talking about, you know, what the Variety article gets into with growing who is playing games. Because Minecraft was really big at attracting
Warcraft?
The younger audience.
World of Warcraft?
Maybe.
Or, like, EverQuest? I don't even know.
Like, the MMO. MMOs in general.
Yeah.
MMOs, maybe. I might go with that. Anyway. Let's see. Questbuster with another great comment saying, Microsoft may have missed on their initial messaging for the Xbox One. But they weren't wrong about where the living room was headed digitally. I think that's a very smart comment because it's absolutely right. Like, for all the crap that Microsoft got with the Xbox One's launch, they weren't wrong on some of the things they were predicting. They really, really were not wrong. But it's a couple key decisions and ultimately messaging that really tanked that whole thing for them. You know, again, I really think, and I'm sure many of you view it the same way, and I'm not talking bad about the Xbox One. It's a fine system. But I think in many ways we're in kind of like a flip-flop of where we were last gen, where PlayStation 3 really missed the mark on the messaging and then kind of had to play catch-up, and eventually they caught up. And I kind of feel like Microsoft's kind of been in the flip side of that ever since that all went down a couple years ago when it was first announced.
Well, it's going to be, I would think, a pretty even playing field, though, when we come to the next generation of consoles, because, I don't know, I don't have a ton of goodwill for Sony right now. I mean, just the way they're treating their customers and all the mod support and backwards compatibility and that kind of stuff, it kind of sucks, because, like I was even, well, I guess I'll get into it later in my gaming week and stuff, I actually dug out my PlayStation 2, to try to mess with that, but like it'd be so much easier if we had that backwards compatibility support on the PlayStation 4, or I guess my PlayStation 3 could do it because I have an original PlayStation 3, but it's still a pain in the ass.
Yeah, no, I get it. One other comment I want to address here before we start to get into some of the other stories tonight in our gaming weeks. Black Mamba 1977 in chat at VOG Network on Twitch says, cable is getting less and less views because everything is going digital too. And that's a huge point as well. Like, I was randomly watching, and this is a funny thing now. Do you know where I watch cable more than anything now? I don't watch it on my TV. I'm watching it now on my second monitor because they do the whole streaming. You can, like, stream cable now, basically.
Yeah.
And then I'm playing a game on my first monitor. But I was watching a cable network. I was watching Pop, I think, and they were showing reruns of House. And it looks like garbage because, you know, there's only so many HD cable networks, and the other ones are standard def. and they look terrible because it's like standard def, but with the black bars because the original was in HD. So it's like, and it's all like pixel.
Here's the best part, like, you know, because I have Comcast, and Comcast charges you more money if you want HD channels. You have to pay for an HD tuner, which costs $14.99 a month. So I say, fuck you, and I just stream all your shit through the other apps, and guess what? It's in fucking HD, and I'm not paying you any additional money.
There you go.
And I get to watch it all when I want.
You showed them. All right. But anyway, my point is that but there's so much digital. And now you see some of these networks going digital, like CBS. You know, CBS with their all access, as much as people really hate that because they feel like, oh, I'm paying to play I'm paying to just watch Star Trek, and there's not a lot of other offerings. You know, they don't compete with Netflix right now, even though the new Star Trek is great. Just saying.
But do you have to pay for All Access even if you have, like, you can't link it to your cable subscription to, like, watch that?
No, it's a it's a premium, like,
fuck
Netflix
that
thing.
Shit.
I know, but, again, it starts.
That's what piracy's for.
But they looped in, like, the Big Brother feeds and all that. There's other stuff besides Star Trek. You know,
I guess.
The Good Fight. And, you know, they're trying. There's the Twilight Zone reboot. But anyway, my point is.
Oh, it does have. Doesn't it have, like, Neil Patrick Harris or someone? Or who's
Jordan Peele is doing
Jordan
the,
Peele? Oh, okay.
I don't know
right.
if he's starring in it, but he's, like, producing it.
So, I'd watch
from Get Out. Yeah, I'm very interested in that, too. But anyway, this isn't a TV show. But here's the other thing about the CBS All Access thing is that when you have it and you're paying for the Star Trek and everything, you can also tune in to, through the app, your local CBS station or like CBS's subsidiary. Like they have a sports channel and a weather channel, those types of things. Maybe it's entertainment. I don't know. But anyway, my point is it's kind of going around Comcast in a way. CBS is selling that direct to you through their All Access. And I wonder if Comcast – the reason why they're nickel and diming all these other places because they're in, and you notice like a company like Comcast really is trying to sell the phone line, the home security. They're not focused so much anymore on.
They really
TV.
Need to cut out the phone line. No one fucking wants landline.
If people are buying it, they're going to try to keep selling. But the point is, they're doing that stuff because they can see what's happening. Is that the future of TV might be these providers that are going around. Traditional television. Anyway, I'm sorry. Yeah. We got a little off the topic about video games, but I think at the end of the day, honestly, I mean, as much as you might kind of roll your eyes and say, I thought it was a gaming show, I kind of think it does all tie together because, you know, going back to the story, you know, because of the growth of the gaming industry and because gaming is one of those things that's taking away from the traditional television viewership and what we know about cable and things like that, it is all having an impact on one another and everybody's kind of having to innovate. And that's, kind of the fascinating thing about where the entertainment industry is at right now. Anyway, going to our chat over at Twitch TV VOG Network. Tiger Claw says, I think it's pointless to subscribe to All Access if the only show you watch is Discovery. All the other shows are crappy and made for old people. I've watched a little bit of the Big Brother. I pay for it, whatever.
Well, I'm actually thinking about adding Hulu, too, because I want to watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but they only have season 6 in the app now, the NBC app, so...
Honestly, if I were to pay for Netflix, Hulu, and CBS, and probably one other too, it would still be less than what I pay for cable.
Yeah.
Right? So, I don't know. This is and that's the reality a lot of people are facing right now. Let's see. Going to other comments here. Bobby Blackwell says, I really wish Comcast would give me unlimited bandwidth because I have digital preferred cable TV. They cap my data because of people getting just internet to cut the cord to go around them. So, yeah, I guess, you know, the data cap of streaming.
Well, it's a good thing
that
the FCC is, you know, in the pocket of these cable industry folks. So, you know, once we get that overthrown, then maybe we can get somebody to say, hey, bandwidth caps are fucking illegal and you can't do it.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. It's probably not with the current guy at the FCC, but things might change. Who knows? Anyway, but to tie it again together back to gaming, because, and as somebody mentioned earlier, Microsoft was probably in many ways ahead of its time with the Xbox One. I think a lot of this stuff we've been talking about, as much as, you know, it might not be directly related to games, I think when we talk PlayStation 5 and we talk the next Xbox and whatever else, the Soldier Boy console, whatever else in seriousness is out there in the future, we might be looking at things that are more integrated with the other types of entertainment beyond just it plays Blu-rays, it has a Netflix app. There might be some more like real integration there, and you kind of see Sony, I think, in some ways dipping their toe in the water with their whole like they don't call it PlayStation Cable, but that's what it is. PlayStation TV View, whatever it calls.
PlayStation View. I actually had subscribed to.
I think that's going
to
be more integrated.
I tried it for like a month or two, and it was all right. But then they lost Comedy Central. I think they lost some big networks, and I was just like, no.
Gotcha.
I don't want it anymore because that was kind of all I was tuning in for. But there was a lot of channels I just didn't want on there. But it wasn't bad. It was just they need more content, and they were losing content and getting content that I just didn't give a shit about.
Gotcha.
So,
yeah. All right. Well, anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about some things that are a little more directly related to video gaming. Our gaming weeks and the types of video games that we have been playing this week. So how was your gaming week? Loki, if you want to cover 2 weeks, I guess, since you weren't here.
I wish being 2 weeks that I played a lot more things. I did not. It was mainly just trying to
get... You were at Disneyland, to be
fair. I was at Disneyland, yes. I was mostly trying to get the DDR cabinet stuff to work. So I mentioned, I think, before I left that I had bought... some memory card slots for my DDR cabinet because I wanted to get those and I found them for a pretty good price. So I picked some up and so I got those in finally and I had to wire everything up because I didn't know how it was supposed to go. And thankfully I figured it out. So I wired those up and then I had my memory cards and they just weren't reading in there first. And so I was like, oh crap, you know, so what the hell? Finally figured out what it was. It's just the memory card slots are so old that the pins inside there are kind of bent out. So you kind of, and even my PlayStation 2 is kind of the same way. You have to not quite insert the card all the way. And I want to say, like, when I was playing DDR and stuff in the arcades, the card slots are kind of like that too. You have to kind of be, just push it in until you feel like some friction on there and then you just don't touch it. And then it will read just fine. So I did all that. And got it working. I loaded the edits I had on my memory cards. I had only two cards that had edits on there. And some that I used to play are just gone. I don't have backups for them anymore. But the rest, though, I did end up finding, and this was really challenging, I ended up going online to try to find the sites I used to use for finding edits. And I did find some of those, but a lot of them are no longer there anymore, and I had to go back through the Wayback Machine to find stuff. But I did find there is a current edit database out there that people actually do upload stuff for, but it's for DDRX. But you can still use those saves if you convert it and stuff to actually work in the cabinet. So I downloaded pretty much the entire library, just everything that they had, and downloaded everything, and then I loaded them onto memory cards. I have about 8 cards worth of memory of edits on there. And so I slowly converted them over. I bought the old PlayStation 3 memory card adapter they have for PlayStation 1 stuff. So I had to take that. I made an HD loader boot disk thing because I found out once I got my PlayStation 2 back from my sister, the disk drive doesn't work anymore. So I had to get that thing.
Why do we loan anything, however?
It's just old. It's an old-ass system. It just doesn't work anymore. I didn't technically use the disk drive anyways. It was mainly just used to run the disk for HD loader. But now it just runs off of a memory card. So, who cares if the disk drive's not working? So I managed to transfer everything onto a USB drive, transfer all of those onto memory cards, transfer all that onto the arcade cabinet. So now I have like 150 plus edits on my arcade cabinet. And it's funny enough, though, it's like some of them are mine, but I don't remember which ones are mine until I actually play them. Some of them I recognize. I'm like, I think that one's mine. And then I play it. And I'm like, yeah, that was mine.
Man, I was really mean when I made that edit.
But I found, and as you probably would have seen the last two streams, if you watch my Twitch streams at, you know, Twitch.com/LokiOLR.
You should go follow Loki.
Yes, go follow Twitch. People that make edits for doubles like to use the entire pad, and usually both, you know, one side and the other side. Very often, you're stretching quite a bit.
Yeah,
and I can still do that, but it
ow,
it will it's very hard on my feet. So. But I had a lot of fun playing some of those, and not all of them were bullshit. There was actually some that were pretty fun. So it was mainly this week is just playing DDR stuff and just getting all of that working because it was kind of a hassle to get figuring out what was wrong with the memory cards, and then finally figured out it was just they're just finicky. And then what else? I downloaded Goat Simulator for the Switch because my kids wanted to play that, and I played a little bit of that. And then just Pokemon Go, pretty much. I tried getting Pokemon Go. I mean, because I was playing it in Disneyland because there's just Pokestops everywhere.
Of course, I'm sure.
Yeah. The problem, though, was like my gacha was being stupid, and so I had to – I ended up having to reboot my phone a couple times. But like it was just like it would stop working after a while.
I think it's just there's so much going on at Disneyland because I remember – I haven't done it in Pokemon Go because I haven't been to Disneyland. Well, no, I'm not – I think I've gone – I haven't gone to Disneyland. I think I went when Pokemon Go was first out, but I haven't gone since it started tracking the gyms and all that. Like, I think it was kind of a different game then. But I remember with Ingress, with all the portals that were there, they're like Downtown Disney and everything, because I was there once for BlizzCon. I think I had just started playing Ingress at the time, and I got one of my, like, unique portal.
Oh, damn, things. I should have played Ingress. Doh!
Yeah, you missed opportunity. Yeah, lots and lots of uniques there. You barely play that anymore.
Right? I don't. Yeah, I don't play that at all. But I did get a lot of walking though. Like it's like 15 miles in a day is ridiculous. But
it's good. You've been a more like fit lifestyle guy lately. So that walking is probably a really good thing.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean that's pretty much it. I didn't really, like I said, play too much this week. It was just pretty much that. I almost picked up, and I still kind of, I know we have to pick up Smash by the end of this month in order to get the free Piranha Plant thing. I don't know if that's going to happen, though. I'm not sure if I'm going to be
picking up. I would, like, buy the whole game right away just because you want Piranha Plant. Like, you could always just buy it later. Yes, it's more money, but if you're not ready, don't take the plunge. I think it's a great game, you should take the plunge.
I should, but, like, I just, the problem is I can't get the Switch enough times, and it sucks because my wife's been really just hammering Animal Crossing, so I've had the PlayStation available and the TV. It's been practically available to me for the whole month, and I've booted up the PlayStation 4 so many times and just sat there going, I don't even know what the hell I want to play on this. Like, I was like, maybe I should jump into Just Cause 4 or something. But I'm like, I don't want to buy another game because I'm just going to buy another game and it's just going to sit there and I'm not going to finish it. Just like Red Dead 2 and whatever the hell else I was playing before that. I've got so many started games that it's just gamer ADD.
I understand. All right. Well, my gaming week, probably not as varied. I played a little bit Diablo 3 because event for the Diablo 1 in Diablo 3, although it's not really Diablo 1. It's just like some maps that kind of look like Diablo 1 in a filter. The Darkening of Tristram, that's what they call it. I finally like needed to get around to playing that event and unlocking all the achievements. So I did that because there's one achievement where like you have to start a brand new character and go straight there and like clear it the whole way through to level 20, which is actually kind of challenging because you don't get as many loot drops as you'd hope for in that. But I did it. And so I played that whole thing, got the achievements. That was my big Diablo 3 accomplishment of the week. Now I'm just waiting to get power leveled the rest of the way to 70. Or maybe I need to do it all again on the Switch to get the achievement there too because I'm sick and I own Diablo on multiple platforms. But I might do it. I don't know. I've been playing some World of Warcraft still. My main Warlock, I got up to item level 370 today thanks to all the bumps in the last patch. And my Resto Shaman I've been working on as well is up to about a level I think 111. But I did play something new this week. I did want to try to do some new games for my Game Boy 2. So I finally downloaded, and I've been meaning to just pick up this game for like 6 weeks, but I'm always like, it's like $30. I need to hold off because I don't know what's happening with my husband's job situation, all this stuff. I need to just hold off. Well, finally this week, I dropped the money and picked up Beat Saber already, I'd already played before because Bobby Blackwolf brought it to Dragon Con, and he has the Vive version.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was familiar with it already. So the game, you know, I kind of knew what I was expecting, but it was nice to be able to play it on PlayStation VR in my living room, and it took me a minute, man. Did you know, like, to get the Move controllers synced, you can't use just any USB cable. You have to get a specific one that will do – like, I guess some of them will only charge, but they won't actually communicate and do the syncing. So I had
No,
it happened. It wouldn't work through one cable. But then when I was like,
no,
Alan, I need every cable in the house to try them. And the third one I tried worked.
Unless they have, like, pins that aren't connected. But
maybe, I don't know.
They will be finicky sometimes, and what you have to do is you have to push the reset button in them. So you have to get like a paperclip out and push the reset button. And that'll occasionally happen even when you have them synced already. Like I did that the last time I was playing the PlayStation VR. I had to push the reset button to do that. Oh, no, I did play a game. I forgot. I played Accounting Plus. I fucking love that game. It's so inappropriate, but I love that game. Okay, so I played Accounting Plus. But yeah, so the last time I played PlayStation VR, I had to do that. And so they do that every now and then. But that, if you run into problems like that, just try pushing the reset button.
Well, I got it eventually by digging up. I was like, Alan, I need every cable that's a match. And one of his phone charger cables did it. So whatever. It's fine. I got it to work and I got to play the game. But it just took me a minute to get it up and running. But you know, if you haven't played Beat Saber, it's a music game. And I know we have a lot of like music game people that listen to OLR because that used to be our bread and butter. So I know for those of you that enjoy music games, you probably already know about Beat Saber. But I got to tell you, it's a lot of fun because you really do kind of have to get the motion. You get a higher score if – and I think the technical thing is that if your controller ends at such and such an angle – from when you slice through the notes. So basically, instead of sitting there going to like slice the notes, just like with your hands, just little motions, you have to do these big, like if you do like big flourishes and, you know, just extra, if you play the game, you get rewarded for being extra and over the top in Beat Saber. And I think that's what's kind of really cool about it. I've been having some minor problems like getting the aim right because it think like you can calibrate where the floor is, but I can't get the right setting. And I think it's just because my camera is too low. I have my camera below my TV because trying to get it on top of the TV, like, you know, it's hard to balance. Like, TVs are so thin. It's hard to balance.
Yeah, the floor thing, I really don't like the floor calibration thing. There is one game, I think it may have been Accounting Plus. It was one of them, but most of them have it. Okay, it's like, okay, lower the floor or raise the floor until it looks right to you. Well, that's hard to figure out, so... The one, though, I had that had it calibrated is it gave me the floor raising and lowering, but it also said what height it was. So you just set it to your height, and boom, done.
But, like, in Beat Saber, you can kind of change the height, but you can't – like, it just kind of measures to where you're at. It's weird. But anyway, whatever. I figured it out eventually. I got it playable, and that's the most important thing. So whatever. Mm-hmm. The calibration stuff aside, once I got in there and played it, I had a lot of fun. It was a decent workout, like doing all those like woo-wee, playing all the, you know, Beat Saber and flinging around. So it was good. I hope they expand it with more songs later. I mean, not that the songs are bad; they're really good. But you know, everybody on PC is modding everything you can think of under the sun into that game. So it'd be cool if maybe the PlayStation gets some expansion packs, some DLC soundtrack stuff. So I would pay for more of the same stuff. Some of those like chiptune dancey songs are really good. So I like Beat Saber. Highly recommend if you're a VR owner or a music game fan, or, you know, both, especially pick that game up if you haven't already. So that was pretty much it for my gaming week. So I don't have a whole lot of housekeeping to get into. I don't foresee any shows off we have planned. I do know Jamie is returning to the show, and I already forgot the date, but she got her work schedule rearranged when they start their new schedules. It's either the last show in February or the first show in March, so she'll be back with us in studio. So that means we're probably going to look a little different because I'm going to move this whole thing over there where the PlayStation 3 is now, and then the camera will kind of be up and over at us, and it'll catch Jamie over the shoulder so she can be Dr. Claw. Or Ms. Claw, as the case may be. So it'll be fun. Anyway. All right. Let's get into some other gaming news. So Loki has some stuff to start us off tonight, yeah?
So for all those people waiting for Metroid Prime 4, you're going to have to wait a little longer. Because guess what? It's under a new studio now. So I don't remember who it was that was developing it originally, but now it's Retro Studios, which is great because Retro Studios makes great games. But they had to reboot the whole development process. So, unfortunately, they did this really short video. Shinya Takahashi, who's a Nintendo's development head, basically made this kind of apology video saying, hey, you know, we are rebooting the development on this, and it's going to take some more time to get it done. So, probably not going to see that.
He said without saying, he said, in my own words, he said, the game ain't good, y'all, so we're going to bring in the folks that kind of did this before to start over. But if you thought or assumed or had your podcast speculating that Metroid Prime 4 would be out this year, yeah, I'm going to need you to hold off those expectations because we're looking like maybe 2021 or 2022 at this point. Is that an accurate summary of what he said?
I don't know about 2021, but maybe like end of 2020. I don't know.
That's not what I was getting from that. I think if they're starting over, Loki, I mean, they might be able to reuse some of the art assets, maybe some of the ideas, but I think 2021 is a little more realistic, not so much.
All right.
I think, you know, if they're coming out with an announcement like this, they mean like it's bumped back, you know. But I appreciate at least Nintendo being transparent. You know,
yeah.
I think we all know that this happened with like Final Fantasy 15, right? When it went from Versus 13 to Final Fantasy 15, and the game we got doesn't look anything like that. Or, well, I mean, maybe a little bit, but like it's very different from that early footage. Like, this happens in the gaming industry sometimes, but maybe it says something about this internet culture and, you know, the way we interact with folks immediately on Twitter and setting those expectations and things, where maybe Nintendo felt like, maybe we announced this too early. We announced this early to try to get you excited about the Switch, and now we wish we hadn't done that.
Maybe we padded out our E3 announcements too much.
So, isn't that interesting? Isn't that a damned if you do, damned if you don't sort of thing? Because people want game studios to announce this stuff so early,
but then when
they do, it's like, oh, but the reality is...
Well, I guess that means we have more room for remasters, so hey, let's get a Mario Maker remaster or
a Metroid Prime Trilogy. I'd be down for that. Heck yeah, portable. And they already took out the Wii controls because they sold it on the Wii U. It doesn't... Because 1 and 2 were GameCube, 3 was a Wii game, and they repackaged it. It was either like... I think it was like a Wii download on the Wii U, but that you could do it without motion controls, essentially. So
yeah.
I feel like the hardest stuff has already been taken care of in Metroid. It would be great if they had a few resources to maybe bump up some of the textures, but you know what? Whatever. Obviously, anything they do for that would take away from Prime 4, maybe. So I don't know. It would be very cool, though, if they would re-release the trilogy to maybe whet our appetite a little more for Metroid Prime 4. That would be cool. But don't get me wrong with this delay. I think one... maybe refreshing thing about what I'm seeing on Twitter is instead of angry people going like, oh, fuck Nintendo, they don't know what the fuck they're doing. I didn't really see that. It was more like, all right, I mean, that's disappointing, but totally understandable. Like don't release a crappy game and call it Metroid Prime
exactly.
4.
Sometimes it's better to, you know, delay your game and restart development rather than hold a beta that looks kind of and then release your game a month from now.
Would you be talking about the next story in our show role, potentially? Is that maybe what you're referring to?
No, I'm not referring to that one. But
one that happened this weekend.
The one that happened this weekend.
Okay, we'll get into that later. But, I mean, I think there might be another good example as well, right?
Yes, that would also be a good example of that.
Now, Bobby Blackwolf over in our Twitch chat says, the only people upset are probably investors and shareholders because they know a crappy Metroid Prime 4 would still be a million seller. Yeah, but as a Metroid fan, I really appreciate they didn't release a crappy Metroid Prime 4 because I don't want the series to die because Metroid Prime 4 is crap.
Exactly, and if you start releasing crappy games, then you're going to lose all of that reputation that Nintendo has of being a company that releases quality games. You don't want to be another EA or Activision. Come on, folks.
Let's see. SG100 Matt says, I completely forgot about Prime 4 being announced, so I'm obviously okay it's delayed. Really? Because I talk about it a lot on this show.
Almost every
how
week.
How excited I was for it. But again, I'm in the camp where I'm like, oh, damn, I was looking forward to that. But again, very happy they're not going to murder Metroid by releasing a half-assed game.
How about a remaster of...
Or slapping the Metroid name on another game that luckily I think everybody's forgotten about at this point. Did y'all forget?
No, I have not forgotten. I have not forgotten.
They did release kind of a snoozer Metroid game, but
oh no, I remember.
Knew it wasn't a Metroid game. I'm talking about the 3DS multiplayer thing. Was it not Prime Hunters? No, that one was actually rad. I don't even remember what it was called. That tells you how great that game was. Let's see.
Prime piece of shit.
Federation Force. Thank you, Bobby. That was it. No, they had the other one was like Metroid going Doom multiplayer. That game, that was like the demo thing on the 3DS. That was cool.
Yeah.
I wish that should have caught more. They should bring that out on Switch. I'd be down for that, you guys. Oh my gosh. Why not?
I don't know.
I'm pie in the sky. You know, again, I want him to work on Metroid Prime 4, so maybe I should just shut my mouth with all these other side projects. Let's see. Tiger Claw says, Nintendo should look at Metroid Samus Returns on how to do a proper Metroid game. I know the Prime series is 3D, but I don't like it always being first person all the time. Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I've always preferred the 2D Metroids to the 3Ds, but, like, I don't hate the 3D Metroid games. So, like, you know, if the, and it has been a while since we did get Samus Returns, I feel like, okay, it's the time is right for them to try a 3D game again now with the technology of the Switch, you know, and the technology's come a long way from the GameCube, even to the Wii, where Metroid Prime 3 was, to, you know, the Wii U's happened since then, and now we're on the Switch that can run Doom Reboot, which is a pretty, you know, graphically intense sort of shooter. I'm kind of excited to see what Metroid might look like in first person or third person, because maybe now with the technology and the chips that are in those guys, maybe you'll be able to switch, which, ironically, which would, you know, be kind of cool, right? Just like you can in Skyrim, right? Yeah. And the Switch runs Skyrim, and you can do first person, third person, whatever you want to do, right?
Sure.
So maybe. We'll see. Let's see. Spyro557 John in our chat says, I actually have Federation Force, but never played it, LOL. Well, I think that kind of...
probably a good thing not to do that.
Anyway. All right. Let's move on to our next story, Logi. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's me. I'm sorry. I'm getting backwards here. We need to... because I kind of shaded this a little bit already, so I thought I talked about it. It has to do with rumors about Fallout 76. There were some rumors going around the internet, as they sometimes do, that Fallout 76 crashed and burned so bad, y'all, that it's going free to play. Well, usually companies don't come out, you know, usually the companies want to say, we don't comment on rumors or speculation. But Bethesda came out and said, no, this is BS, basically. So anyway.
Never say never.
But just so you know, the rumor was founded because EB Games in Australia apparently pulled copies from store shelves. So that's where the rumor came from, is that, oh my God, y'all, they're pulling it from store shelves because this game tanked. You know, like that. You know how the internet and Twitter runs, yeah, and Facebook, yeah, and they all run their mouths with that, right? So anyway, a message on Twitter where Bethesda, and the actual Bethesda account, so we don't know who said it, but they said, there is no truth to this rumor. So, they are not going free to play with Fallout 76, yeah, or tinfoil hat. If they are, they just don't want to tell you right now. But anyway, now I don't, you know what? I think the logical step is for the game to get drastically reduced in price, like $20, then go free to play. I don't think it's going to go straight from $60 price to Black Friday sales and some of the, you know, minor 10, 15, 20% cuts you saw around that time to free to play. I think they would try to sell it for $20 first.
What is it even being sold for now? I mean, let's see.
Aren't they still trying to get the 60 for it, or am I wrong on that? Maybe I
don't think it's 60 anymore.
All right, Loki's looking it up right now, if you guys are trying to beat him to the punch.
Gee, thank you for scrolling down the page. Why? Why would
right
you
there?
Do that?
So he's busy searching a popular retailer on his laptop there to see what they're currently charging for it.
I don't even see it listed on here, other than
there's a bundle.
There's a bundle and a bunch of shirts.
Do they not have the game?
Oh, here we go.
There we go.
$39.99.
So it's down to $40.
New.
All right, well.
Speaking of $39.99, deep discounts. I saw, but I checked online. I didn't see the price points, but I might pick it up for this kind. I saw that there was someone had taken a photo of a Walmart that was clearing out PlayStation Classics for $25. I was like, for that price, yes, I would pick that up.
I wanted to find like a retail. All I could see was that picture on Facebook.
It was a Walmart.
Yeah,
in Boston.
But I was like, Walmart picture on Facebook, that's kind of shaky ground, right? Somebody could have photoshopped that, okay? I was looking for a retail listing. So I went to Walmart's site to see if they were and that's not what they were charging on Walmart's site.
No.
They're charging that reduced $59, I think, or whatever.
Yeah, the cheapest I think online right now is like $54.99, yeah, and that's
like
Amazon.
But I was
like
going to tweet it to Bobby and say, is this close enough? Because he said something on his show about when it comes down to $20, I'll finally pick one up. And I was going
to
tweet him the $25 listing and be like, close enough?
$25, I think, would be all right, because that's, you know, that's worth it for like,
Bobby's clarifying in chat. Still too much. 20
Still
is
too
my
much.
Line. 20 is my line. He drives a hard bargain. All right. Let's see. Frodo Swaggin says, the only good thing about that game, I think Fallout 76 here, was the power armor helmet with the Ultimate Edition. But some comments on the rumors. Questbuster simply saying this rumor was absolutely dumb. Well, at least it wasn't like somebody completely making it up. They had some sort of, but I agree, it was a little bit of a jump to conclusion sort of thing. Bobby Blackwell says, fans were probably trying to shame Bethesda into going free to play, as if it works like that. But I get the comments. Some people think it does work like that, so I get it. And that's why that follow-up about the PlayStation being $25, that's why I'm kind of questioning, and I didn't link it to Bobby, because I was like, I wonder if somebody's trying to, like, get that rumor going to see if competitors if retailers like Amazon really will cut the price that low. Because you know, right?
Yeah, I gotcha.
We live in a crazy world. Who knows? All right, now we can go on to the next story, Loki. Sorry.
All right, so let's talk about DeepMind. So DeepMind is this wonderful AI system that they were using. It plays like some different games before. They had Go, and I want to say, was it chess or
not
something?
Not Pokemon Go, but the ancient game Go, yeah.
So now, of course, you know, we're stepping it up. Instead of, you know, those simple games, we're going to take on StarCraft 2. And so they actually took DeepMind, they trained it against to play StarCraft 2, basically cramming 200 years worth of gameplay into 2 weeks, because they sped up the games and had basically sped up the simulations. So then they pit them against some of the best StarCraft 2 players, and apparently it did win, because some of the it's sort of unfair, I guess, in the way that it operates, because it can see the whole map. It basically doesn't have to zoom into different spots, so the fog of war is still there for them, but
I would say it doesn't have to like study things or be like, what's that? Because the computer kind of, it already knows.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But, and then of course it played very unconventionally. So, you know, it was hard for the competitors to basically counter some of this stuff.
Interesting though, because AI is programmed by humans.
But this one though, it basically learned to play the game, and it played itself. And so it didn't really pick up any like their strategies, I think. So very cool. I would love to see like some video of this, but
just be careful. This is how Cylons were made.
But I don't know, man. Should we be, you know, threatened at the fact that, you know, that it's able to play StarCraft 2 so well? I mean, what's next?
No, like, because StarCraft isn't real life yet.
What about Overwatch or like Fortnite or something like that? AI is going to just take over everything.
As long as there's a plug to unplug it. SSG100 Matt with the mandatory Skynet comment in our chat at VOG Network. So kind of interesting. I mean, it's interesting. It's an exhibition sort of thing. But obviously computers winning game tournaments, I don't know if it's that. I mean, I don't know. But then again, during Awesome Games Done Quick, don't they do like the assisted speed runs or the computers?
Those are the tool assisted ones. Those are basically kind of like recording. It's like recording a demo type thing. But I don't know. Those are still all human input stuff, but it's just that you're recording it so you can make it frame perfect.
DJ Rama S in chat asks, how is this any different from Deep Blue beating Kasparov at chess? I guess on face value, it's not, but there's the complexities of what StarCraft II is compared to chess. I'm not saying chess isn't a complex game. Of course it is, but the rule set for chess, all things considered, is very simple and doesn't have a lot of variables, per se. The only variable is responding to the moves of your opponent, right?
Right.
So, but in StarCraft II, your maps could be different. Your positioning of things could go from, 64 squares on a board to millions of pixels. So I think it's more like that level of complexity that goes with the StarCraft II game versus a chess game that makes this, you know, but at its level. But you're right. Is this a repeat of what we've heard years ago with AI beats human at chess? No, I guess this is more
I'm curious, though, if they're doing, it's non-standard strategies or something. Can we learn from this to basically play StarCraft 2 better?
Yes. Can Deep Blue come up with a solution to end the government shutdown?
I think that's
I'm not going to go there.
That's pretty easy, but you know.
You're just going to keep that cans of worms locked. I had to make the joke. I had to. All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about something going from a joke to a bit of a mess, maybe another different type of joke, and that is the Anthem demo this weekend. Look, y'all know I've been a little bit skeptical, a little salty about Anthem here on this show, and that's just because I haven't agreed with the way that EA's been running things and making a lot of decisions. And one thing I didn't talk about during my gaming week, but I tried to play the Anthem demo, but I didn't talk about it because I feel like I didn't really play it. Here's what happened. I was given a code to the VIP demo or the pre-order demo. But I guess a pre-order got to invite one or two or three other people. I don't know, depending on maybe what level they pre-ordered it at. I don't know. Regardless, I got an invite from a friend. So I was like, all right, well, might as well check this thing out because maybe, who knows, maybe I'll stop being such a hater. Maybe this thing will blow me away and I'll change my mind. So I downloaded the multi-gig thing on Origin, set that all up. So yes, I tried to do it on PC because that's where I would prefer to play because I play a lot of games on PC. I load up the demo. Now, I didn't play it till Saturday because in my mind, I was like, when the doors open right away, it's going to be a clusterfuck. Sure enough, what happened on Friday? Total clusterfuck, right? Servers can't handle all the people mm-hmm. and all that stuff. Fine. So I knew in my head, I was like, it ain't going to really work till like Saturday or so. They'll figure out the issues.
How do the servers, like, they know how many keys they gave out, right? And our servers just weren't prepared for the number of people. It's like.
So it's interesting. So Bobby actually addresses that perspective a little bit tonight on his show. And what you're saying isn't really different from the way a lot of people on the internet would say things. And basically, like, you know how many people are going in. You should have the server infrastructure for that. But I suppose it basically comes down to this. And I don't necessarily disagree with this. I don't hate it for this reason. I hate it for other reasons. It's not that, like, they didn't necessarily have the server set up ready to go and all that. But it's that some things you just do not know how it's going to work until you unleash it to the masses, right?
I guess.
Take our move to Twitch, for example. Some things we tested, we thought would work, we thought would go great, and then poof, 1 week, Skype breaks our soundboard. That didn't occur in the testing. Who knew, right?
Well,
you didn't know until we were there, right?
It's typical that Microsoft stuff breaks everything. I mean, that's
look. But that's the gist. I'm kind of simplifying what's a more complicated issue, but that's the gist of it.
Yeah.
Okay? So, fine. But here's the thing. I go into the demo. I'm able to get past that login screen. I'm playing for a little bit. And then I get to a loading screen, and the loading screen is just loading and loading. And I get to the loading screen after being asked like 17 times, are you sure you don't want to play with other people? Anthem is best experienced when you play with other people. Push this button right now to join an experience with other people. And I'm just like, okay, look, I know how trash fires on the internet are. If I don't already know how to play this game by the time I join a group with people, they're just going to talk smack. Even beta or not, it doesn't even matter. So I want to just play a little single player so I can, like, how do I move? How do Babby crawl? Like, I just want to play single player to figure all that out, right? But then I'm on the loading screen, loading screen, loading screen, loading screen. And it's just, I'm sitting on the loading screen for 5 minutes. And this is after, like, for some reason, I can't play on my main monitor. I have to play on my side monitor because, yes, this is a 4K monitor, and I can't play 4K gaming with my current setup. But I had it downscaled to 1080p resolution, but it still wouldn't play on my 4K monitor. But, like, frame skip, like, so I had to play it over here, which was weird. So I was already frustrated. And then I'm stuck on the loading screen. And finally, after 5 minutes of sitting on that loading screen, I was like, you know what? Reclaiming my time. It's broken. Whatever. What was I thinking? And I stopped. And that's why I didn't talk about it during my gaming week. And I didn't want to come out here and just be like, Anthem sucks. I didn't play it because it wasn't really ready to be played this weekend. Now, I said, to some extent, I understand all these engineering things and that some things you're just not going to figure out until you go. Here's where I have a problem. Here's why I think EA continues to screw with BioWare and their releases and why they're setting Anthem up to potentially, and I might be wrong, because some of the people that did get in and are playing it seem to enjoy it. So maybe it'll do just fine. EA sold this as like a VIP sneak peek. Who is in that preview this weekend? People that paid extra money or at least committed to, I realize all the pre-order systems are different, but people who said they were going to spend extra money and pre-order this more advanced edition of Anthem. And that's who this was for. Their open demo for the public and for everybody is next weekend. Now, I'm not a big fan of paying more money to access games early as it is, but that's just kind of the day and age we live in now. Why didn't EA, if they didn't truly know what they were going to be facing, and if they knew they were basically going to be testing multiplayer with this whole thing, because they want you to go a multiplayer very, very badly through all the in-game prompts, why did they not do the open, let's have everybody in it test first and market it as stress test? This test will offer you experience of Anthem levels, but you will probably experience frequent issues. If they had sold it as what it was, as opposed to the VIP, very special people access edition, I'd hate this whole thing a lot less. But that's the problem, is that EA was tempting people with extra money and spend this extra stuff to get in this thing early that ain't even going to fucking work.
But you see,
you're paying money to be our testers.
But you see, if it wasn't called a VIP test, then where would be my sense of pride and accomplishment with EA? I wouldn't feel as special. I wouldn't feel like the special snowflake that I was, that I dropped money to play that I'm just showing EA, look at me, I'm ready to give you money for no thing.
It still would have been, you could have been the little snowflake all you wanted, because they would have marketed it as a very special one level preview, capped at level 10 to stress test the servers, and sold it for what it was, as opposed to what it ended up being. That's where I get into issues with EA. And you know what? This whole thing I'm complaining about has nothing to do with the hardworking people that made the game, has nothing to do with the artists, the engineers that are trying to fix these servers as fast as they're identifying the problem. My issue, if you think about it, has nothing to do with that. It's how it was marketed and sold by EA, which, when I got ticked off about a lot of things with Mass Effect Andromeda, guess what? It was about decisions that EA made about how they were going to preview the game in advance when it wasn't really finished and all this other stuff.
Well, here's my question. We only have like a month away. Do you think it's going to be ready in time?
Well, then I heard another thing, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard another thing that the demo people were playing was apparently like a six-month-old demo. And that just, I don't know if that's true or not. So take it with a grain of salt. But that just made me even go more like, why would that be what you're putting out there for VIP people 2 weeks before the game launches? Because I'll bet you there are people with those pre-orders that played that thing this weekend and canceled their pre-order, just like they did with Mass Effect Andromeda when all of that started coming out. Don't believe me? I know the person that gave me the key was thinking about doing it. I don't know if they did it. But there are people that are going to cancel the pre-order based off of what happened. Whether it's rational or not, this is just what happens.
And then you know what else is going to happen? Because EA likes giving you that early access if you pay them the extra money. People are going to get that early access and see how much of a clusterfuck it is, and then people are going to cancel more pre-orders that way too.
Questbuster in the VOG Network Twitch chat says that's kind of true. The blog statement by BioWare said that the demo was an older build. Well, speaking of which, it wasn't just my opportunity to rant about Anthem, but I actually did have a whole little thing here where BioWare has talked about what's going on basically this weekend. So Chad Roberts with BioWare said in a BioWare blog post, "We've been testing the entire game and platform for several months, but there were a few things we missed. Real-world play frequently leads to unexpected issues. I want to dispel one comment we've seen, that we underplan for server capacity. To ensure stability, we intend to manage our servers to match the player population as it grew. Overall, we had excess capacity prepared for population increases and continue to do so. That said, what's important is that all parts of the game work as designed to meet players' needs, and that did not happen in the opening hours." So why did you sell it like something that was going to be different then? Like, that's the problem, EA. Stop lying to us. Like, stop thinking we're all stupid just so you can take our money. Like, tell us what it really is, and maybe these things won't happen.
But that makes too much sense. We can't do that. Honesty, what?
That's not nice, warm, fuzzy marketing. Anyway, some of the issues that have been cited, rubber banding, connection issues, blocked entitlements, blah, 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 blah. I guess investigations are ongoing. Stuff is going to be fixed before the next demo. Another comment from the same guy. "I want to be upfront that this is a difficult one and something we may not resolve during this weekend. Many players are not seeing this issue, and the last thing we want to do is destabilize the experience for everyone. You know what this is? You know what this is? I got the perfect analogy, because this is what everybody's talking about all over again because of some documentaries that hit Netflix and Hulu this week. This is gaming's version of the Fyre Festival, a very elite VIP experience for those of you that spent a little extra money.
I got to watch that, actually.
To experience this special event. Thanks, EA, for putting on the Fyre Festival demo this weekend. Okay, maybe I'm over. Maybe I'm being a little over dramatic here on this program, but I think there's some merit to the comparison I'm making there. All right, anyhow, let's move on. I don't want to live in a negative space. You know what? For those of you that are looking forward to Anthem, I hope they've learned what happened this weekend. I hope the game comes out. I hope it's wonderful. I hope you all have a happy time gaming. Who knows? Maybe I'll come around on it. Maybe I'll have to eat my words and be like, I was wrong. But right now, I ain't spending $60 on it. I got other stuff I can play, like Kingdom Hearts 3 is out on Tuesday. So, and yes, that will probably keep me busy for like 6 weeks with the slowest I am on games. So anyway, let's move on to another story. Loki.
So esports is definitely changing. So one game company, Giant Software, is actually getting into the esports game, and they're doing that with none other than Farming Simulator. That's right. The first season of the Farming Simulator League is going to be starting soon. It's going to consist of 10 tournaments that are going to take place in Europe. They're going to have a chance to win up to $280,000 in prize money put up by the developer.
Now, for those that are listening on the podcast, you're going to hear like low motor noises because we're actually looking at footage of Farmer Simulator 19. Because I have to be honest, like I was like, I don't like what do you do in Farming Simulator? Like
you farm.
I know this has been like a game people talk about for a long time, but what where's the competitive head-to-headness going to be with this? And right now on the stream, we're watching this guy with a tool chop a tree into smaller bits. Now, granted, I just picked a random like 2 minutes of gameplay here. Maybe not pick the most exciting stuff in the world, but a lot of the gameplay
Maybe.
I'm not like dogging the game at all. Like if this is like the type of thing you're into, like people play flight simulators, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we have a caller. He hasn't called in a long time, but he used to talk about flight simulators and stuff. And that's cool. Like if you are into farming, you're a 4-H person or whatever, like, and the graphics do look really good. I'll say that. Then maybe this is going to be a game that's like right up your alley. But like, I don't really understand like what's the competitive side of this. Even a slow, dry game, something like Civilization or something, you know, I get that at least there's like a competitive edge or something like that.
No, but they're going to do something. But anyways, they're saying they're going to hold 10 different events. It says each event will allow teams and players to earn circuit points and win prizes. And they said once the season has concluded, the teams with the most points earned will gather at FarmCon 2020. Apparently, they have FarmCon. And to crown the Farming Simulator champion, the winner will take home $110,000 in prizes. Apparently, they're going to time these events around major gaming events like Gamescom and Paris Game Week. I guess they've sort of kind of dipped their toes in the water with this. They've done some competitive Farming Simulator stuff with the Farming Simulator Championship Series. But I'm trying to see what the actual events are.
Let me while you're looking for that, let me get some comments in our chat over at VOG Network on Twitch. Questbuster says, I saw a good response to the same question on a forum that the actual management of things in the game actually requires quite a bit of skill to handle well to keep your farm successful. It's like StarCraft, but with farms, I guess. I mean, I'm just saying the footage didn't convey that, but okay. I mean,
no,
I mean, there's management to it that, you know, is probably interesting for folks that are like super into that. So, cool. And ActDef says very plainly, I don't get World of Warcraft or Final Fantasy 14 either. Oh, going for my jugular. But I get it. Those games aren't for everybody either. But it's something that entertains people. Right. This game might not be fun for me, but it might be fun for you. So you should go have a blast with it.
Yeah. So, I'm not really sure what else they've got there. It says they have the competitive events and different agriculture-related events. They didn't really say, like, I don't know if they're, like, doing specific what the challenges are. Oh, shit. They have, like, an actual, like...
Yeah, like a whole,
a
like,
whole
rig.
Controller
it looks
shit.
Like, yeah, there's, like, a $300 controller. It looks like the that mech game that Steel Battalion.
That's like a little less Steel Battalion and more of
that
like...
That was like a lot of stuff. I don't know. Anyway.
Looks like the Microsoft racing controller there.
Frodo Swaggins in our chat says, this game is way too buggy to be an esports game. A lot of those simulator games, sometimes it doesn't plan for what needs to be simulated, I guess.
I don't know. I'd check it out.
Bonds006 asks again, so the contest purse is how much? It was $100,000, right?
Well,
like that?
They said two different amounts here. So they apparently they're going to do this this tournament that's going to have 10 different tournaments across Europe, and that has up to $280,000 in prize money. And then there is this thing that they're going to have this farming simulator champion that's going to take $110,000 in prizes. So I'm guessing that throughout the whole tournament, they're going to have, you know, various prizes, and the grand prize at the end is $110,000. So throughout the rest of it, you have $170,000 that you can earn with all the other minor tournaments, wow. I guess.
And how much can I win from playing a DDR tournament?
I don't know.
80% of the pot and a free pizza? Sadly, I don't think we're at that same level just yet.
Yeah.
I think there was just a world championships. They probably did offer a slightly bigger prize.
Well,
which is funny to me.
This is the only
sport we ever like super got into.
This is being put up by the developer, the publisher. So, Konami, where's the money?
There was something about like they had to do like a thing across the street from the actual event to actually get like more people to participate or something. Like, I don't. It just sounds like Konami. Yeah, Konami's a mess. What else is new? Anyway.
Maybe you shouldn't, you know, gold plate all of your, you know, your cabinets out there and maybe save some of that money for prize pools.
All right. Well, moving on to another game that people are talking, or game series, I should say, that people are talking about this week, Resident Evil. Lots of people talking about the Resident Evil 2 remaster, because I know that just recently came out, so I think some folks have been playing it. I passed on it because I like the old Resident Evil games, but I don't know if I really want it, because... Does new one support VR? I just know Resident Evil 7 had the VR, and I was like, nope. Like, it was just too much. It's too scary. I can't. Ooh. Anyway. But I know Resident Evil isn't only a successful game franchise, but it's a successful movie franchise. Although the movie franchise, like, kind of wrapped up, right? They said they made the last one, but we all know there's going to be a reboot in the future or things like that. But there may also be something else as well, because Deadline, another one of those industry magazines, reported this week Resident Evil TV series is in the works at Netflix. Because Netflix is making so many shows these days. Why not? They've had some success from video game-based things like Castlevania. We know they're doing a thing on Witcher. So, although Witcher is technically a book, too. But anyway, no reason why Resident Evil doesn't head to Netflix. So that's the report coming out this week.
That was a rumor. The Zelda thing was a rumor.
Zelda thing was a rumor, and we never really got anything official on that. Ingress Anime, that's a game. That's coming to Netflix.
Yeah.
But that's Netflix didn't really... Netflix paid for rights for that, which, by the way, it's still not out. It's supposed to be out last year. But Netflix just bought like distribution rights to that. Anyway, who's making the Resident Evil Netflix show? German production and distribution company Constantin Film. They were behind the Resident Evil movies that were kind of based on the games. Like, they had some characters in common.
They had zombies.
They did. It was zombies.
And there was characters with the same names. And that's about it.
No showrunner yet, but the Deadline report says that they think the plan is for the series to expand the Resident Evil universe and deepen the existing mythology. The series will keep the basic premise, which served as a setup for the movie franchise. The drama series will explore the darker inner workings of Umbrella Corporation and what happens when the T-virus breaks out. It's in early stages. Apparently, there's action sequences, Easter eggs, all being planned. We don't know when, but...
Give us some of that Walking Dead money.
Not too surprising. I mean, the Resident Evil films are kind of, you know, I know a lot of horror movie buffs because... the stuff I work with the cult movies, the Rocky Horror and everything. I know people that and Resident Evil, like that whole series is kind of like a cult thing. Like some people here locally made like a whole fan film about Resident Evil that I always see promoted around here. So it's just, you know, it has its fans, and I'm sure people will be very excited about a Netflix series.
You know, going back to the Ingress anime.
Oh boy. All right.
I would love if the Ingress anime was actually about people playing Ingress sitting in your car. What are you doing?
Being paranoid. Is that little 7-year-old girl taking my portal right now? I'll show her.
I'd love that.
All right, anyway. Let's see. Metal Mayhem in chat says, the Resident Evil movies weren't good movies based on video games. Good action movies, maybe. Let's see. SG100 Matt says it's 5 years too late for the Walking Dead money. Well, maybe they want something to come take its place. I don't know. There's always going to be zombie fans. Zombie movies have been around forever. You know, and horror movies, gore movies, people are just always into that. That's a thing. So I wouldn't say that just because The Walking Dead is kind of less, like, people seem to care about it less now. Like, it kind of peaked a while ago. Like, I wouldn't say that that means that Resident Evil can't be successful. I'm sure if it's a good show, it's a good show. Netflix has had a lot of good shows. Like, everybody, I still haven't watched it myself, but everybody's talking about that Haunting of Hill House. It's like a phenomenal series. It was a movie in the 90s that was kind of right?
That was House on Haunted Hill.
No, they did that, and they did The Haunting, which was the same thing. They came out like the same year. There were two movies.
One had
Jeffrey Rush, the other had Liam Neeson. I'm telling you, there were two haunted house movies, and the one with Liam Neeson is the one that's being adapted into this TV series.
Because the one that I remember from the 90s was the one, it was the remake of the old Vincent Price movie.
Yes, that was the Jeffrey Rush one.
Oh, yeah, that was kind of...
Yeah, anyway, but they were both kind of... But anyway, my point is that Netflix series is apparently very good. Sabrina the Teenage Witch, cheesy ABC TV comedy show with Melissa Joan Hart, although I did love it. I really did love the Sabrina series. But, you know, totally different direction, Riverdale-style direction for Netflix, and apparently it's really good, too. Like, Netflix has had a lot of, like, really good shows. So, anyway. All right. I think we should maybe focus a little less on the now and maybe go back to some classics with the classic game of the week. And so we take a look behind the door that says "Do not open," and we find a journey through space and time where we're joined by the one and only Dark Sakura, or Jamie Summers. Hi, Jamie.
Hi. We have a loading screen when you open my door.
Yeah. Is it a blue screen of death, or an orange screen of death, if you will?
No, it's a loading screen that shows someone going up a ladder.
I see. All right. Well, you're actually joining us, I know, on a work break tonight and joining us with not a whole lot of time to spare. But the show just wouldn't be the same without your presence. Excited to have you back in a month.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, let's get to it. The classic game of the week. So I know you picked something a little timely this week. So tell us about it. The classic game of the week.
Well, I picked Resident Evil 2 for our classic game of the week.
Well, and you can't do that. That just came out.
No, I'm picking the original Silly Beans.
Oh, okay. That works.
Yeah. The original version came out actually in North America before it came out in Japan. Of course, over there it was Biohazard 2. It came out January 21st, 1998, so almost a full anniversary. Which the funny thing is that, of course, I think that was also the release date for... No, yesterday was the release date, so it was a little bit later than that then. But at any rate, it was produced by Capcom. And it's survival horror, and you play as Leon or Claire, who are trying to escape Raccoon City after all the zombies have taken over. The big thing with this one that was made it different over the original, the first game, is that while it does focus on exploration and puzzles and some combat, it has different branching paths for each player character, different obstacles, so it's a different story for each playthrough. This one was kind of the interesting one. There is and I've seen the full beta, watched actually a full playthrough. Is that there was what was called Resident Evil 1.5. And it had a lot of stuff in common, but instead of Claire, it had another lady in it. And I most of the time remember her name. I don't remember her right now. It started with an E. I'll have to look her up again. But at any rate, she eventually became Claire. Although in the new game right now, her outfit is one of the unlockable outfits for Claire. So it was pretty funny.
I'm sure everybody in the chat room is yelling out the name right now, but it doesn't work when we've walked through the door. I'm sorry, guys.
And I'm at work right now, and I kind of don't care. So I don't care to look it up. At any rate, it has been on so many different systems. We had... The PlayStation, we had a second version, which was the DualShock version that came out later in the same year. It had a Windows version. It had a Nintendo 64 version. There was a Dreamcast version and a GameCube version. So it is considered, I mean, it goes back and forth. Some people consider this better than the original, than the first game. And then some people say the first game was better. It has had better voice acting, I'll give you that. But at any rate, it has had so many other ports. There was even a modified 2.5D version for the GameCom. And guess who had that version? That would be me.
Nerd.
Well, I don't know if I still have it somewhere in there. And, of course, there was the sequel, Resident Evil 3 Nemesis, which was, as I call it, the Jill game. And, of course, we just got the remaster, which is pretty freaking amazing. But moving forward, since it is a survival horror game, you basically have to solve puzzles and you get guns with, you know, ammo. So you have to be very strategic with how you use it. You can also, you know, you have your life that you can check on and you can, you know, smoke the green herb to refill your life. I'm sorry, eat it. Or what Dan and I do is that there's the one where if you mix like certain colors, it's this brown thing, so we call it the brown pile.
Wow.
And you get first aid sprays and stuff. Yeah, we call it the brown pile. And so you have, you know, you actually, your health reflects in the posture and movement speed of your character. So, like, if they're wounded, they'll hold their stomach and limp a little bit. But if they're near death, they're just going to drag. So they also have a limited number of items that you can store in different places that you can... I think it was only Claire before that got, like, the hit pack, but now you can actually, well, at least as far as we found so far, you can get 2 hit packs in the current game, so that's pretty good. You also, you know, save your game using a typewriter, but in the original one, you had ink ribbons that you had to collect to be able to save your game, whereas this one is just save, save, save as much as you want, thank God, because it's hard. Even in the easy version is actually kind of hard. But anyway, the game had real-time models and, you know, your characters would move around, but the backgrounds were all pre-rendered. And it used kind of like a tank control, so meaning you used one to move and another one to rotate. And then you had this zapping system. So... where you have the 2 different puzzles and storylines for the characters, and if you finish scenario A with one protagonist, the B scenario has different things unlocked. So, like, if one person did one thing in scenario A, then scenario B has to pick up from it or do 2 different things. The original version of Resident Evil 2 had 2 standalone minigames, one called The Fourth Survivor, where you play as an umbrella agent called Hunk, who was also ended up being like a character in, was it Outbreak, I think it was? Like with his Delta team and everything. It was pretty neat. And then you have the Tofu Survivor, where you play as a giant box tofu with a hat and a knife. And the more damaged he gets, the redder he gets. And I think he can't heal either. The Nintendo 64 version, actually, no, all of the other versions except the Nintendo 64 version had a mini game called Extreme Battle, which had 4 playable characters in 3 stages. So it was pretty neat, too. Now, as far as I understand, the Fourth Survivor and the Tofu Survivor have made it into the new game. So the thing about the Tofu Survivor is that it was actually a placeholder character for... working on the collision detection, and they left it in as a playable.
So, I'm reminded of the Killer Tofu song all of a sudden.
Funny. Well, at any rate, 2 months after, basically this game is set 2 months after the original Resident Evil 2, which is really great because the remake is also still set in the 90s. So, and I'm not going to go into the story because if you don't know it by now, then whatever. But let's go back into a little bit more, though, of the development. So Resident Evil 1.5 was basically, oh, it was Elva. Elva's the name of the character. Anyway, so this game was all laid out. It was all mostly done. You had different, you know, different characters in this one. I like to consider it a glorified, like, pre-release beta. That some of the characters evolved into other people. And then basically, though, after certain things happened in the real world and, you know, there were certain things that just did not mesh well with not just the development team, but with the powers that be at Capcom, they axed it and started all over. So basically, that's how we get the current version that we see. All the music was composed by Ueda Masami, Uchiyama Shisaku, and Nishigaki Shun. And one track composed by Mizuta Naoshi. But it was all meant to be, like, mood music, you know, all kind of horror themes, you know. In the new game, by the way, if you get the deluxe edition, you can play with the original soundtrack, which is pretty cool. But the music basically went between, like, the ambient music to kind of industrial music, and, you know, certain places were orchestral. It just really was inspired by, like, real movies. They actually did an orchestra album that was recorded by the New Japan Philharmonic, so it's pretty cool. There's also a remix album called Biohazard 2 Remix Metamorphosis. But yeah, as I said earlier, there were all these other different versions. The PC port was a Windows 9X base, you know, so nothing really awesome. Of course, Nintendo 64 was going to have some pretty big limitations because the full motion video had to be super compressed. And its port cost about $1 million to do. They also added some different in-game information called the X files, like EX, but spelled capital E, lowercase X. They had different documents and different lore associated in the game, and its resolution was, of course, different. It did support the expansion pack, which put you to 640 by 480. Ooh. It's just like Windows 3.1 back in the day. They did plan a port for the Sega Saturn. I actually do have the original Biohazard on Sega Saturn. But it got canceled due to some weirdness working on the Saturn because the Saturn is kind of weird. And then the Game.com one only had Leon's story and removed a whole bunch of elements. There was also, and this is the one I was talking about, there's an unfinished build of Resident Evil 1.5 that got leaked onto the internet. And someone actually made it playable, so there's full playthroughs now on the internet. And then the game, though, in Italy was banned temporarily due to criticism from the civil rights movement over there for its realistic depiction of violence. And also the Guardia di Finanza, which is, I guess, a law enforcement agency in that part of Italy, seized 5,500 unsold copies. And then they lifted the ban after Sony requested a re-examination. You know, this was all a lot going on during the whole violence and video game, you know, big stink that was being posed, a lot of stuff, you know, just being posed all over the place. And, you know, a lot of people found the story, of course, far-fetched, but very compelling, and a lot of people really liked that zapping system. And, of course, its graphics at the time were pretty awesome for its day. The only one that, you know, basically the subsequent versions that came out after the PlayStation, except for the Nintendo 64 port, didn't get rated as well as the original. But now the Dreamcast one, though, was really, really lauded for its better sound development. Hmm. At any rate, you know, the game sold... gosh, the advertising alone was $5 million in, you know, 1998. And it sold, it broke, like, gosh, like some record right at the start. But the pre-orders itself in Italy were over 100,000, which came to about $6.6 million. And it was the fastest-selling video game in North America. It sold in the weekend right after its release, it sold 380,000 copies and grossed $19 million. And it surpassed the revenue of all but one Hollywood movie at the time and broke the sale record set by Final Fantasy VII and Super Mario 64.
I wonder if the remake is going to get banned in Italy, too.
Probably not.
All right. Well, I'm running out of footage, so we got to wrap up.
Okay.
But
well,
there it is.
At any rate, there were tie-in stories of Resident Evil Uprising and then the Dark Knight Chronicles and then one of the, I think, Gun Survivor games. So there you go.
All right, your classic game of the week, but it's new all over again, thanks to the remaster, Resident Evil 2. Hey, Jamie, we got to get back to the show.
It's amazing.
But before we get back to the show, quickly, yeah, your thoughts on the remaster, because I doubt Loki's played it. I haven't played it. So what are your thoughts on the remaster, because I know you've been playing that this week.
We started off with the Claire scenario, and honestly, I find the voice acting is amazing, and you know how picky I am on voice acting.
Huh.
The voice acting is very good. Instead of, you know, having space between one person saying something, it actually sounds like a real conversation. Some people are fussing about the face models. I thought the face models were excellent. Hmm. And one thing that I've kind of looked at this after the whole stink with Mass Effect Andromeda, is I've been looking at the character's eyes. And the eyes have fantastic reflections. They meet their tone. And there's even, well, I'm going to spoil it because, you know, there's that character Marvin, who was the cop that you meet up in the thing. They actually showed his skin getting ashier and ashier as the game progresses, as he's, you know, dying. They show, like, a realistic look of somebody bleeding out. The head explosions and the people getting torn apart. Okay, I know this is gross, but it's anatomically right.
Well,
and I'm curious. I'll... Like, Dan Magnum somebody in the back of the head because we're taking turns with it, and you can actually see the ocular cavity in their skull. It was pretty amazing.
No thanks. I'll be passing on that. But hey, for you gore fans,
girl, it's not that bad. All
right.
You only have a few sections, but one of the little tiny things is that they put nods back to the old game. Like, they had misspelled welcome, like with two L's for Leon's welcome thing. So there's a big banner hanging over this that has it spelled right, but there's a gap between the L and the C, and you can find an extra L on the ground. And then they have references to characters from other games, like Rita, what's-her-face from Outbreak. It's actually really well done, and their Easter eggs tie in the lore so amazingly well.
All right.
You even have Pipe Zombie.
All right. Well, we're running long. We got to get back to the live show. But any final thoughts from you, Dark Sakura, before we bid you adieu for this week?
I can't wait to have my Sundays off again, really.
And we can't wait to have her back. So there's Dark Sakura joining us earlier today with the classic game of the week. We're back here live in our studio with episode number 761 of our show already in progress. And I guess now I'm figuring out why there's less and less people, I guess, tuning in tonight. I guess there's a big wrestling thing going on right now.
Oh, yeah, Royal Rumble or something?
Yeah, because Bobby was looking at the – he likes to kind of see, like, ooh, how are we doing on Twitch right now with the against, like, other channels and stuff. And he said, oh, there's a bunch of people, I guess, that will, like, watch wrestling and comment on it. Like the kind of, like, watch parties or whatever. They're not showing it. They're just – like, it's like, come here and we'll kind of watch together sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So kind of interesting, I guess. We'll talk a little bit more about that Twitch community feeling in an upcoming story a little bit later on. Some quick housekeeping with VOG Network before we get back into some news, including some rapid fire news. But I just did want to point out here, there's some big changes with VOG. Some of the, like, old stuff into some of the new stuff. And I mentioned earlier the radio feed is going to be sunsetting. It's no longer going to be there probably by the time a lot of you guys hear this in our podcast feed. But obviously we had many wonderful years there via Shoutcast. So thanks to all of you that supported through the radio and will continue to do so through the video and Twitch TV and, of course, the podcasts that have always been there. So many of our shows have been around a long, long time. And still available through the podcast feeds. Also, one other thing that's going to be going away very soon, this is going to be the last week where you can actually check in to Orange Lounge Radio and participate with the gamification with VOGNetwork.com. The reality of the situation is more people were kind of into it in 2012. It's kind of a newer thing. And, you know, when Foursquare was bigger and more people were using that, it was kind of like a little bit about where the idea was kind of inspired by of sorts. But just less and less people doing that now. We just kind of want to focus our resources on getting more eyeballs on Twitch and what we're doing over over here and all that fun stuff. So unfortunately, the gamification is going to be going away a little bit, which hopefully will, you know, just kind of allow the resources to go to recruiting more help here to get some more original VOG programming and things of that sort. So, all right. Let's move on. Let's get into some more gaming news, including some rapid fire news, Loki.
Yes. So, Minecraft is getting an update soon, and they're adding composting. So you'll actually be able to take some of your unwanted crops now and be able to turn it back into bone meal to help build crops. Although, from what I read so far, that while it's nice that they have those there, it doesn't seem to be a very good source of getting bone meal. It's almost easier just to wait for, you know, skeletons to just die. But it is an option, and also people are using them to kind of look, they look a little bit like beehives. So, you know, people have set them up to look like mock beehives, I guess, for their farms. But yeah, it is something that they're working on right now, so that should be coming soon.
One of my friends started those Minecraft Realm servers, and I keep meaning to, like, get in there, and but I'm having a hard time figuring out how to do it. He said he invited me, and I went into Minecraft. I don't see it, so I have to figure it out. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out for us, too.
Yeah.
Or even just running, maybe just running the PC version again, but nah, the console version would be better. We'll do that.
I like the Windows 10 version. That's what I play mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, even though the movie's not yet out, and I have high hopes for it, Detective Pikachu is already going to be getting a sequel. So that's pretty awesome. Apparently, they said they have hired, I guess, was it Oren Uziel, who has written for such movies as 22 Jump Street, The Clover Paradox. Let's not talk about Cloverfield anymore. The Cloverfield Paradox. Okay, so he has one good movie attached to it. And he's also writing for the upcoming Sonic the Hedgehog movie. And the upcoming Mortal Kombat. They're doing another Mortal Kombat film?
Yeah, they're supposed to be doing like a reboot.
Well, 22 Jump Street's good, I guess. But he's going to be
Notice
writing.
It's not 21 Jump Street. It's the sequel, 22 Jump Street.
The second one was funny. Both of the movies were great, actually. And I'm disappointed that they were supposed to be doing a crossover between 21 Jump Street and Men in Black. That would have been hilarious. But they didn't do it because they don't have the balls to pull something that awesome off. So we'll get Men in Black International instead and whatever.
I want to see this Detective Pikachu. I got to admit, I like the take they're taking with putting Pokemon in the real world instead of it being super cartoony. I'm curious.
I'm down to see the movie.
I think a lot of that curiosity is why they're already greenlighting a sequel. I think they see what the buzz is, and that there's a lot of people that are approaching these trailers with cautious optimism and are probably, you know, resharing the trailers and stuff. You're laughing.
No. I'm not laughing about this.
Okay.
I'm just thinking to myself, I really want the Sonic the Hedgehog movie trailer. I need that trailer.
Yeah. We'll
I need see. To see what we're dealing with here. Yeah, and see.
Love Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey.
Mm-hmm.
And if Sonic is like Twitter Sonic, we may be in for a good movie. But I will see it anyways, no matter
Apparently
how shitty it is.
There was a meetup, and Tiger Claw just referenced it in our chat. There was a meetup between the Twitter Sonic people and the movie Sonic people, like, met up. But that means they didn't write the movie, just to be clear.
I did go see Glass this week, which it was all right.
Yeah.
I had watched, like, all the spoiler reviews and stuff like that beforehand, and not a lot of people liked it. And I see with their points, it was okay. But it's kind of like, it's not the M. Night Shyamalan that made Split and Unbreakable. It's M. Night Shyamalan that made The Happening and all of the other movies. But not as terrible as that. But it's just like, that's not really the way to end it.
All right. Well, Detective Pikachu sequel looks like it might already be happening based on some of that positive spin. So let's see. Anyway, moving on to more rapid fire news. remember I talked earlier about how the game's got to get the price cut before it goes free?
Yes.
Well, ironically, Overwatch is getting a price cut this week. Overwatch on PC is down to $20.
Nice.
So if you want to get the standard edition of Overwatch for PC, it's down to $20. The original price was $40, which I think was even probably a discount from there. The Legendary Edition, if you want some more character skins and some crossover stuff, is now $40. It was previously $60. So I'm not saying that like Overwatch is going free to play. This is a very different scenario. Overwatch has been out for like 2 years. It might. I know that's a lot of buzz that always seems to come up, is that, oh, Overwatch might go free to play. But it doesn't seem to be yet. It seems to be they're still continuing to take the price down. I imagine the console versions will follow pretty shortly if they're not already there. I think this is going to encourage more people to pick it up on a second system. I think there's a lot of that happening because, remember, Overwatch is not cross-play, nor do they seem interested in making it cross-play. I think Blizzard kind of wants to keep the keyboard mouse people separate from the controller people.
I'm fine with that.
It would be nice if they would put the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 people together, but they just don't seem motivated to do it.
Well, they could do the Xbox One and PC people together because they would have, you know, the keyboard mouse support, you know. Separate, you know,
but
cross-play.
They're not going to do it. You're fanficking. Yeah, fine. They're not going to do it. That's the reality.
I don't even care.
But it's only $20 if you want to get a different version of it. But, you know, the console version's not changing, at least not yet. But we don't know what the future might hold. We do know what the future holds for the Epic Game Stores and their free games giveaway. They're giving away Jackbox Games, the very first one right now.
If you haven't, you
can get that on PC. It's free. The next game they're going to be giving out starting February 7th, Axiom Verge. That's a pretty good title to be given away for free. That is a Super Metroid-esque kind of clone. Obviously, they did some things different with different types of power-ups and things, but obviously very heavily inspired by Super Metroid, Axiom Verge. Great soundtrack. All done by one dude.
Nice.
Is my understanding. One dude did, like, the whole thing. So it's very, very great production. So, yeah, I mean, I already own it on PlayStation 4, but I'll probably pick it up again for PC. Why not?
It's
going to be
free.
Exactly. So, all right.
I think I have that on PC, actually. I don't know.
Well, you should double check and check that
out. I don't know. I have a vast library of stuff I don't play. So,
Metal Mayhem asks, where is the Jackbox giveaway again? It's in the Epic Games Store. So I don't have a link because I'm trying to do a show. And I don't know how.
Just go to the Epic Games Store.
And once you install the store, it'll be there. And then let's see. Deekman says, just grab that on Switch. Great game. I'm assuming that's Axiom Verge, not the Jackbox thing. But they're both great, in my opinion.
Well, both of them are on there, too, I think.
Both are on Switch. Yeah. You're absolutely right. So, Axiom Verge is cool. Like, if you are a Super Metroid fan, like I am, I think you'll get a big kick out of Axiom Verge. I thought it was great. So, all right. Let's move on and travel around the world and check out some release dates. And what's coming to a store near you? I think I know the big one, right?
Yeah, well, let's start off with Kingdom Hearts 3. That's coming out on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One this week. We have a game called Penguin Wars that's going to be coming out on PlayStation 4. The Sphinx and the Cursed Mummy on Nintendo Switch. Dragon Marked for Death on Nintendo Switch. Robotics Notes Dash and Robotics Notes Elite HD on Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4. And Ace Combat 7 Skies Unknown on PC. And Wargroove on PC, Switch, and Xbox One.
All right. Traveling over to Japan, not coming out this week, Kingdom Hearts 3, because it's already out. Came out on Friday. I actually have a buddy that imported it and has been playing it this weekend. So, I guess it really happened, you guys. Kingdom Hearts 3 really is releasing after all this time. It's pretty exciting. But that already released in Japan, so that's why it's absent from the releases this week. But what you do have on the release dates, you have Nelke and the Legendary Alchemist, Atliers of the New World. That's coming in a regular, anniversary, and premium box. So there's a lot of different editions of that coming out from Koei Tecmo on the PlayStation 4. Conception Plus, Ore no Kodomo wo Undukuri, comes out this week from Spike Chunsoft. And a collector's edition of Stardew Valley goes to retail for the PlayStation 4 in Japan this week. Dragon Ball FighterZ Deluxe Edition is available on the PlayStation 4 this week. Traveling over in Japan real quick to take a look at the Switch. It looks like that same Nelke and the Legendary Alchemist is also available on the Switch, as well as Robotics Notes Dash is available on the Switch as well. Dragons Marked for Death, Fate Extella Link, that same Stardew Valley Collector's Edition, and Opus Collection, which includes The Day We Found Earth and Rocket of Whispers. That is all out. Oh, another duo edition on the Switch. Child of Light Ultimate Edition with Valiant Hearts, The Great War Double Pack. So busy week on both platforms. I guess now that the Kingdom Hearts 3 release happened, everybody else can come to the party. filling in for the Europe dates, Loki, while Darkstalkers is still out.
I will do my best because apparently certain certain sites don't know how to sort by date.
Yeah, she was really thrown by that last week, too. She was not happy, so we'll have to find a new...
All right, so, well, let's just...
I'd be curious, where are you guys in Europe getting your release dates? Because we might need to follow suit.
So, anyways, so Ace Combat 7, Skies Unknown Collector's Edition out on PC this week. We've got... Let's see... Jesus Christ. Sphinx and the Cursed Mummy, that's on the Switch. Kingdom Hearts 3 on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. We've also got Child of Light and a Valiant Heart double pack that's coming out on the Switch. And Crash Dummy on the Switch and PlayStation 4. Dragon's Dawn of the New Riders on Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and Nintendo Switch. And Song of Memories on PlayStation 4. And 8-Bit Hordes on PlayStation 4 as well. And I think that may be it.
All right.
Yeah, that is it.
Close enough. All right. Well, we're going to move on to the mailbag. You guys email us over at participate@orangeloungeradio.com, and we read your emails here live on air. So really appreciate you guys who take the time out to email us during the week. Let's get to the emails. First email tonight from Tom, who emails us saying, "Hey, all, congratulations on making the jump to Twitch. All said, it looks to have been pretty successful. I've been listening since the Live 365 days, and you've never failed to make me smile. I've been wanting to give back in some way, so here's my OL archive. A super ugly, super simple webpage that lists every OLR MP3 I could find." And I guess I'm okay to give out the link here because it's in our email. https://OLArchive. That's OLArchive.samurailink3.com. I've pulled all the episodes I could possibly find on the website, Misty's archive, and a couple others. If I'm missing anything, let me know. I'll get it added. This does auto-update every week, so there's no maintenance to it. Feel free to mirror, advertise, or link. Very cool. That's awesome. I don't know where it's pulling those MP3s from. Is it pulling from our own server, or if it's pulling from the SkyDrive archive that was up there previously, or what all that pulls from? I didn't look that deep into it, but that's still really cool. This does remind me, though, to warn you guys. This was something I really was supposed to take care of about 6 weeks ago, but OLR is going to actually be switching hosts behind the scenes. This should be a seamless thing. You guys shouldn't notice. It's just the lovely space we've been donated for so long can only sustain to be donated for so much longer. So we're going to be moving it to a different space, probably something a little more like – I'm not going to say it's going to be one of the big podcast hosts, but likely one of the ones you're a little more familiar with, which the good news is that's going to open it up to get it really easy for us to get on things like Spotify and stuff like that. But the downside is that because it will not be donated and the space will not be limitless – a lot of the old episodes are going to disappear. So if you are linking to anything at orangeloungeradio.com right now that is an old episode, I would urge you to grab it and save it elsewhere because they will be going away in a few weeks. Now, again, going to be seamless. If you're just interested in like the last 10 episodes, last 5 episodes, you'll be fine because we'll copy those over when we go to the new solution. But the vast archive that we have already on orangeloungeradio.com will be going away. So this email is actually very timely, so I can kind of warn you about that. Of course, I would have still given you some warning, but I do want to let you guys know what's coming. I think I've referenced it a little bit on the show before. Again, if you're listening to the podcast, it's seamless. My big thing is that I don't want to lose the people already subscribed because, you know, that's a big deal. We've been on iTunes a very long time since the day they launched podcasting, so I don't want to lose the people we already have subscribed. So we'll make sure that all gets done seamlessly for you guys. So... all right. DJ Rama S says, "Rob, tell that person to contact me. I have a few hundred episodes." So there you go. Some OLR listeners networking together to listen to old OLR. But I really do want to warn you, old OLR is very different from new OLR. We've evolved a lot in 17 years. So I just don't worry. Please do not judge the current state of Orange Lounge Radio based off of episode 3. Okay? Very different. Anyway. Bobby says, "Oh, he's hosting each MP3 himself. Wow, that's pretty cool." Because I was going to say, there's actually more, and Bobby might be interested in this too. For other super nerd programmers like myself, Bobby, here's the API endpoint. It will give you a JSON array of all episodes. JSON array of all episodes. https://api.olarchive.samurailink3.com. So that same link, but with API dot in the front. So have a ball with that. Anyway, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, or hate mail, let me know. We now return you to your regularly scheduled RuPaul coverage, and that is from Tom. Thank you. I think it's awesome.
Because we have an email, so you know. We are not covering Drag Race right now.
That's right. We have an email, so no Drag Race coverage this week, which is a bummer because there's a lot I could talk about. But you'll just have to listen to Reading is Fundamental with my buddies from GameBuoy.org and Video Game Realness doing that. So anyway, thanks. That's cool. Like, I endorse it. Why not? With the footnote. Old OLR is for, like, you hardcore nerdy fans of the show, which I love you and I appreciate you. It's for you guys only. I don't want new people to, like, what's this Orange Lounge Radio show about? I've always heard of it. So they go and they don't download episode 4. Like, what the hell is this?
It's old.
It's very different. Very different. All right. Anyhow, let's move on. Let's talk about an email from YYR. Hello, LR. I wanted to take a moment to clarify something about the impending closure of the Wii Shop channel. Tuesday, January 29th, is the last day that you can purchase content from the Wii Shop channel using Wii points that you already possess. So time is running out. You better get on that. You got till Tuesday. Beginning Wednesday, you will no longer be able to buy Virtual Console or WiiWare titles, and any remaining Wii points you have will be forfeited. They will be reinvested by Nintendo to make more money. However, according to Nintendo's website, you will still be able to re-download previously purchased software even after January 29th. You will also still be able to use the Wii to Wii U transfer tool. These services will be discontinued at a future date, but that date has not yet been announced. So that's interesting because all the websites are kind of running with something else. So interesting about that. I guess, though, I'm still okay with all the hysteria being out there about the closure because I think a lot of people probably haven't checked their Wiis in some time. But this sets them up for that. You know, this sets them up to make sure you spend your points so Nintendo doesn't just take your money for free and make sure that, you know, you've bought everything. And if you know the re-downloading ability is going away at some point, you might as well just kind of have all that in order, even if we don't know the exact day yet. I still think because it is scheduled to go away, everything we said last week about the reality of digital and all that other stuff, I think it still all holds.
And there are, I think, tools to still be able to download that stuff. I think people have a lot of that backed up, and you can still download it even if you don't. But, you know, you should. And why do you still have Wii points? Seriously, I mean, like,
spend them.
Like, I don't even think they've sold those.
I need to just double check on my Wii U because I transferred it all. I need to double check just to make sure. I feel like I have like a 100 point balance. Just like I have one of those balances where I can't buy anything because nothing is under 500 points. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's where I'm at. They got me. So they did the whole, like, what is it? 10 hot dogs in a pack, but 12 buns. That whole thing. They got me. Anyway. Moving on. Oh, YYR finished up. So don't worry yet about losing access to those NES games you bought 13 years ago. Life goes on. Well, I'm worried. Anyway, Frodo Swaggins with our last email of the week saying, so I've heard a lot of hype about the new Kingdom Hearts game. I have to admit, I have never played any of the games. That being said, I don't really know a lot about them. Can you explain what the games are all about? I kind of need something new to play, and I'm hoping this may potentially interest me. And that's from Frodo Swaggins. All right, y'all, pull up a chair. We got a 6-hour show tonight. We're going to explain the plot of Kingdom Hearts.
I honestly think that there used to be a YouTube channel that would do kind of like these wrap-ups of like plot.
I don't know if they actually launched it or if I'm spoiling something. I really hope I'm not. But I know Captain Spike over at Game Buoy was supposed to be doing like a Kingdom Hearts show at some point that was going to kind of wrap it all up. So, I mean, obviously I want to endorse the content that my friends are making. So there is that. But here's the thing. Look, obviously we're kind of joking. We cannot possibly sum up the plot in even like 5 minutes, let alone like 5 hours.
I see that Eurogamer has a kind of a plot synopsis of like the games, that what you need to know before you play Kingdom Hearts 3. So you could try that. I know there's other like more entertaining channels that will do a plot summary of like stuff. So Just do a quick YouTube search and you'll find, you know, several videos talking about this story.
Here's the thing. Let me actually approach the question a lot more simply, because he didn't say explain the plot of Kingdom Hearts. He said, can you tell me what these games are all about? Like, why are people getting excited about them? Here's the reason. Okay, so when the Kingdom Hearts franchise first launched, it was Square Enix getting access to the Disney property. The Disney games that we had until then, I mean, you'd have a couple good ones, like DuckTales, right? Epic game. Mm-hmm. Mickey Mouse Capade was pretty cool on the NES as well. So you'd get some kind of hit and miss when it came to Disney games. But the thing that was special about Square Enix partnering up with Disney is that you had like a Square Enix RPG type of game, but featuring Disney characters. Now, that's basically what Kingdom Hearts is. Now, it's not an RPG like Final Fantasy, although some elements are in that. It's a little more real-time action-y. It's more of
action. It wasn't so much like Final Fantasy before, but now it's pretty similar to some of the Final Fantasy games because those games are now real-time.
I would say mix it a little more with the gameplay of a game like Zelda. You know how like Zelda is like more action-y and in the moment, yeah, but it has like RPG elements? That's kind of like mix Zelda with Final Fantasy, and that's kind of like how Kingdom Hearts kind of plays. And I encourage you to go there. Believe me, everybody under the sun is going to be streaming Kingdom Hearts 3 this week, because everybody's going to be like, I'm the first to stream Kingdom Hearts. Everybody's going to be streaming Kingdom Hearts 3 on Tuesday. I say everybody, but I can already see some people are going to be like, not me. That's fine. But there's going to be, when I say everybody, I mean like a lot of your favorite streamers are going to be looking at it or checking it out. So, I mean, go check out some of the folks that are streaming it. It'll give you a better sense. But I think people get really excited about Kingdom Hearts because it is, you know, original Final Fantasy creators, the main, characters. The main characters in the game were like created by Square Enix, kind of like for Disney. So like Sora, Riku, those characters were made by Square Enix, but kind of like for Disney specifically for this game. But those characters basically travel to different worlds based on Disney franchises, which if I remember right, in the very first game, the very first place you go, once you get past like the town where they're all from and you get to the central hub, the Traverse Town, I think the first one is Alice in Wonderland, if I remember right. So you go to a whole world based on Alice in Wonderland. And so you team up with, you don't team up with the Queen of Hearts, but you team up with either the White Rabbit or like one of the guards. Or something. It's been a long time since I played you guys. But like you, like those guys will actually join like your party and will play with you. And like what you're trying to help bring order to these different worlds and so forth and push back against the Heartless. And now I'm getting into the story that could go on for hours and hours. But this is why people love Kingdom Hearts, because people really like Square Enix games like Final Fantasy. And by the way, the Final Fantasy characters show up in these games too. So, like, when you go to this Traverse Town, like, Aerith is there, Sephiroth is there, who is voiced by Lance Bass in the original Kingdom Hearts game. That is a true statement. Sora was voiced by Haley Joel Osment, who I think is still voicing him even for the third game, even though he's, like, full-on adult now. But when the first game came out, he was still kind of that kid that was in the Sixth Sense. You know what I mean? So it's kind of interesting. But anyway, so it's like Final Fantasy worlds collide with Disney worlds, and that's what get people very excited about it, because there's a lot of Disney fans out there too. I mean, look at the opening moments of tonight's show. We geeked out for 10 minutes about Disneyland and Loki's trip there. How much Kingdom Hearts content did you see at Disneyland?
None.
Isn't that unfortunate?
Well, I didn't look either. We spent very little time in shops. I'm sure there was something, but I didn't go seeking it. I didn't see any Tron stuff either, so, you know.
Mm. Yeah, it's unfortunate. Anyway, Bobby Blackwolf is giving some input on this email as well. There was an interesting video from, I think, GameSpot that actually talks about the history and how Nomura wanted to make a game like Super Mario 64. Square said the only way you could get that over is if you had something recognizable like Disney characters. Then it went into the stuff about how they pitched it to Disney and how Disney pushed back. And Nomura was like, no, we'd make the game my way or we don't make it at all. And Bobby says Sora is still Haley Joel Osment in a higher voice. Deekman says Leon or Squall is voiced by David Boreanaz, Angel. If y'all are Buffy fans, let's see. Dark Tetsuya says, wasn't Kingdom Hearts the original elevator pitch since they were in the same office building? Oh yeah, I think I've heard that story too. Deekman says they have a Kingdom Hearts version of Donald and Goofy they pull out on special occasions in different Disney parks. One time I saw something Kingdom Hearts related at Disneyland. It was actually California Adventure. And I'm still sad to this day I couldn't afford that statue.
I would love a Kingdom Hearts movie series. Like,
Right?
Like a trilogy. That would be just and we know, such
we
a
know
badass
Disney
movie.
Will do crossover because that new Wreck-It Ralph movie had that scene with all
it
the
would
princesses.
Be so fucking amazing.
I am
but
so down for this. Oh my God. A Netflix Kingdom Hearts show, except it wouldn't be on Netflix because Disney's launching their own Netflix. So on the Disney service, Disney Go, is that what they're calling? I forget. But anyway, that'd be great. Oh, Bobby Luckel says there was supposed to be a Kingdom Hearts TV show on Disney XD. It got tabled. Well, bring it back for this new Disney Netflix competitor, as if we need another thing to subscribe to. Anyway. All right, let's move on. That was a good email. Sometimes we got to go back to the basics. We have to remember, too, I think it's very important to recognize, like, that first Kingdom Hearts game was, what, like, 2001? Like, some of our listeners, this is so weird to say, some of our listeners were probably, like, 5 years old when that first game came out, and they're, like, 20 now, and they're like, what was the big deal, you guys? I think this is a big reason why, in the past few years, Square Enix kind of did those HD re-releases of Kingdom Hearts 1.5 and 2.5, was to kind of get people, like, familiar with those again. So, anyway. All right, let's move on. We do have some more stories to get out for you guys before we get to your calls via Discord. If you're not already aware, last week we said goodbye to Skype and we said hello to Discord. So if you want to call into the show tonight, you will have to be on our Discord at vognetwork.com/Discord. I'll detail how that all works again in a little while, or you can refer to the pinned message in the OLR channel once you get there. In the meantime, some more news stories for us. Loki.
All right, so the GDC put out a survey to game developers. And we got some interesting information. So 4,000 game developers filled out the survey, and it basically goes over different things, including working conditions and unionization. So let's go ahead and kind of run down some of the trends that we saw here. So first off, the survey came back with about 50% of the game developers actually wanting to unionize, which is pretty cool. 18% of the people that they had surveyed had also said that they were developing a game for a next-gen console, and that Steam is the dominant PC and Mac download platform, but 59% of the people that they had responded to it just like the 30% rev share, which makes sense. Some other fun figures. Nearly half of the game makers work over 40 hours a week, including, they said, 44% spent over 40 hours, and with about 3% averaging 60 hours a week. The driving factor of that is mostly self-pressure and wanting to work overtime just to get some of that stuff done. And let's see, other fun things. Aside from Steam, some of the other storefronts that are high on the list here. So Steam was the top with 47%. Basically selling directly, so via your own websites, was 26%, followed by publisher-owned and Humble Store and itch.io, 17-18%. Last being like Discord and cartridge. I've never heard of cartridge. That's something new.
Switch cartridges.
No, cartridge is a website with K, not necessarily Switch cartridge. And you know, of course, they want, of course, a better portion of their profits. As far as unionization, they think that 47% believe that they should unionize. 26% maybe, 16% no. Whether they think that workers will actually unionize, 39% or maybe, 21% yes, 24% no.
Interesting. These are and this is all from like GDC, you know, related organizations, and the GDC is coming up in March.
Right.
So I wonder if you'll be hearing more talks on this sort of thing, and maybe there'll be unions there trying to tempt people to unionize or something like that. It could be very interesting.
They're saying that the majority of the split right now in the game industry as far as developers is about 80-20 men to women. They're saying that most of the devs are coming from Europe and North America. That most of the people that responded have been making games for less than a decade. So definitely, I could see that with a lot of the trends. You know, a lot of those tools have become available more recently for free, even. So
makes sense.
It makes it a lot easier to get into it now. Let's see what else. As far as the company size that they're working for, we'll just kind of go over this real quick. So Larger companies over 500, about 20%. Also tied with that, though, is myself only. So 20% working for themselves. 2 to 5, 15%. And then kind of, you know, around that 100 person range, about 10%. So pretty neat.
Yeah, and this the results are all what Loki's reading from is all available online if you want to check that
out. Yeah, you can go to, I think the GDC's website actually had the survey. You can check out. They have like a brief little summary there. Let's see. Yeah, it was at reg.gdcconf.com, and then it's GDC's.
That's their registration site, yeah.
Yeah, so it's their red site.
Hmm. Interesting. I'm very curious to see where this talk about the unionization and everything kind of leads in the future. You know, that's not the first time that folks have talked about kind of coming together to unionize for, you know, some of these working conditions to be improved and so forth. So I guess the only way it gets better is if everybody threatens to walk out, if it doesn't. But then there's the whole other flip side of that. Well, we can replace you with somebody younger. And so it's going to be an interesting battle to see what ends up happening there. So, but yeah. I think in a way what's really happening is that I think, especially as you talk about with those numbers, with how big the studios are, I think you have a lot of people that are just like, I'm out. I'm going to start my own studio with my buddies, and there'll be four of us, and we'll get the Marvel license and make a new card game. Right? Like, I think that's kind of, in some ways, I feel like that is where the why they're not going to unionize is going to happen. It may be the case, because I think you're going to have a lot of people just get fed up, quit, go do their own thing. And then they're perfectly happy doing it because the tools are out there to succeed as an independent person. Look at Axiom Verge, which we brought up earlier in the show. That was one dude, you know.
One last interesting thing. So half of the devs that responded said that the Switch was the most interesting platform. And of those, 1 out of 4 have had their game sell the best on the Switch as a platform. So that's pretty
interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on. I want to talk about something that's kind of a follow-up to something we talked about last week, because this is more late-breaking news during our show last week. And I don't know if you heard at all about this, Loki, but there was a Twitch stream that was going on that was trying to raise some money for a gender dysphoria charity, which is transgender issues. Mermaids is the UK charity that was raising this money. And I still don't understand the how, and maybe somebody in chat kind of knows how this happened. But apparently what happened is that Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, as people are calling her now, ended up calling into this stream. And then that kind of had the streamers like sort of floored. And she was able to talk about, you know, why transgender rights are important and how we're still fighting for, you know, those equalities and so forth. But also kind of talking about like her own political platforms and, you know, some of the things, because she's very recently in Congress. And, you know, I realize she's a very polarizing person, and I'm not here to get into are her politics right or not. I'm just getting into, isn't it fascinating that this is how she's communicating with people? And I think is, in a way, and I must admit, part of kind of what draws me to her is almost like she understands memes. She knows to go on Twitch. Like, I think very oftentimes we feel very disconnected. I think from Washington is like, oh, it's just a bunch of old fuddy-duddies that don't know what.
There are a lot of old fuddy-duddies that don't understand.
There's a lot still.
I mean, like, you watch any of these, like, different congressional hearings that they have about, like, Facebook and stuff, and where they're asking just, like, grandpa questions about stuff like, you don't know how the fucking computer works stuff. Oh, yeah. Whoa. It's embarrassing. So, you're embarrassing yourself.
So I think when we talk about, like, you know, where the Gen X and the millennials kind of feel a little distance from the boomers, it's like it's to see that representation more, I guess, millennial in AOC's case, representation, you know, in Congress is pretty exciting for a lot of people, just because, you know, here she is going on Twitch streams to promote, you know, her politics and the things she's talking about. And I kind of look at that. And again, regardless of whether you agree with her politics or not, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, wow, like, we feel a connection to Washington, D.C. in the gaming community. Anyway, Bobby Blackwolf in our chat room says, the way I understood it is that she tweeted about it. Someone working the stream but not on the air reached out to her and worked out how she could call in. So it was a match made on Twitter. What another freaking, like, how many people in Washington would you see connecting via Twitter? Maybe the president has done a lot of business dealing on Twitter.
It's hard to say that he's connecting with people.
Let's see. Anyway, Deekman says she made a joke earlier about setting up a Smash tournament in Congress. She's hip. Yes. How do you do, fellow kids? Anyway, and then Fifth Dream says she made an all your base joke, and today she did the why not both thing. So she's the meme congresswoman, basically. Anyway, all that aside, again, I don't want to make this an AOC segment, but my point is, isn't that fascinating where, like, politics came to Twitch? And that's where we were kind of talking about last week. We kind of got into the conversation where it's like, dude, if y'all thought Twitch was an underground thing that people didn't know about before, like, it's getting bigger and bigger. And this is, you know, going back to the very beginnings of the show, talking about, you know, where television going is the future of broadcasting. We're looking at it and what's kind of developing here, very homegrown. It's very, very fascinating. Anyway, there was a very interesting article written over at Ars Technica that talked about the new online town square. And so I'm kind of citing that website and their article specifically because I thought it was a very interesting perspective on why everybody was kind of talking about this whole thing. And, you know, also talking about – it talked about how, like, a game like World of Warcraft is sometimes like an interactive chat room. The simplistic gameplay is something to keep you occupied but while you talk with friends. You know, that's how some people view it. And then, you know, now Fortnite, a lot of people view that as less of a game and more of a social network.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as, you know, more and more personalities are coming up around Fortnite and things like that. So anyway, they say in an excerpt from the article here, a quote, "Perhaps more than any other artistic medium, games provide a handy latch point for that kind of casual secondary social interaction." And so they go on to talk about, you know, Twitch and so forth, where the game itself is secondary to the people that are playing it. And then... lastly, the article kind of sums up here. When people ask me what Twitch is, my default answer is that it's a place to watch people playing video games. But that's really an incomplete answer. These days, Twitch is often just a place, is just as often a place where watching video games serves as a convenient excuse to gather with like-minded streamers and viewers in the closest thing we have to a live digital town square. And I thought, so shout out to Ars Technica, and I believe that was Kyle Orland who wrote that article. I thought that was a really neat perspective on the whole situation and very accurate. You know, we've talked about how, like, Orange Lounge Radio for years, I don't want to be like, we started the trend. But, you know, I've tried to say it here at Orange Lounge Radio for years, and we've all said, like, oh, this show started because it was like, it was us all gathering at the dinner table after playing DDR. We were at the diner talking about, you know, DDR, the music games, and other games we enjoyed, and just sitting around talking about video games. And that's kind of what we wanted to bring to the internet. Well, it turns out that's what a lot of people are bringing to Twitch, is this very virtual space to have these conversations, and kind of what we're doing now. I'm pretty sure everything you guys are seeing here on the side with the headlines that are coming up and everything, you guys probably are already somewhat in tune with this. Maybe not everybody. I know there's a few listeners out there that maybe follow games a little more casually, so they hear about some things for the first time on here. But I think there's plenty of you that already damn well know the gaming news. You're here for the discussion, and I think that's super awesome and why we want to be able to participate with our listeners, so it's not just Loki barking you, me barking you, and all that stuff. It's, you know, us having a conversation, and I think that's really cool and just so interesting about where the future of broadcasting and so forth might be headed. So what do you – did you hear about that the politician on Twitch and all that?
I remember reading a little bit about that. I just didn't follow too closely, but that's cool. I mean – I hope that helped out their stream with getting more coverage and maybe more donations.
I think the goal was like $500, and they ended up making like $300,000. Don't quote me on those numbers, but it was like, yeah, the awareness because, and it wasn't just AOC that came on the stream. They got like Jim Sterling, a lot of like, you know, personalities and people to call into that too. So whoever the PR person was that did that, I mean, that's a person that ought to be hired like at EA or something. To manage the communication there, because whoever like managed that charity stream that was, you know, only aiming for, you know, a minor amount, all things. I mean, $500 is nothing to, I'd love to raise that kind of money for an awesome charity. But I mean, just when that was the goal and they just shattered through the roof, like that took some talent. So props to the organizers, quite frankly. Looking in our chat over at Twitch, at our own little town hall at Twitch.tv/VOG Network, Fifth Dream Today gives the tongue-in-cheek answer saying, you go to my free cams and do the same thing with naked ladies. Hey, you know what? We all worship at some kind of temple, I suppose. Anyway, Bonds 006 says, filthy casual here. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. That's why I really don't like... I don't like to talk down to the audience ever, and I'm not perfect, and I'm going to have my moments where I should have said something better, but I really do try to approach things where it's like, I want to assume that like we're not just like we're not the first person to break this news to you, but at the same time, if you haven't heard before, here's kind of like our take on what's going on. It's kind of like a interesting fine line you have to walk sometimes, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, let's see. Kaijudo says the Twitch thing is cool, but at the same time, you don't want outsiders knowing about our secret places. Once they see the Twitch models dancing on their streams, they're going to say it's a porn site and try to attack it. But I think that's just, again, that's like one small part. That's like saying somebody met somebody on World of Warcraft and took them across the state line and killed them. Like, that doesn't happen to everybody. It's horrible, and it shouldn't happen to anybody. But just, you know, unfortunately, these types of crappy incidents happen in place. I guess I just compared porn to murder. Sorry. See what I mean about choosing my words better? But, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that is one small part. The porny thing, you know, obviously you can't have full-on porn on Twitch. But the, you know, the boys and girls that are, you know, using a little more appeal to sell, you know, their stuff – I think that's really one small part of what Twitch is offering. So, anyway. Let's see. Other comments here. Bobby Blackwolf says, I'd love to raise $500 for my favorite charity, Vogue Network LLC. Hey, we appreciate all those subscriptions and the Biddy donations. We really do. We've been very, very pleased with how many of you guys are actually subscribing to visit the video archives or just support the network financially with your, you know, a lot of you guys just using your Twitch Prime that you get anyway once a month on Vogue Network. And that's, hey, awesome. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate it. And we promise to spend your money wisely and really appreciate you guys kicking that in. But it's not mandatory. It's never been mandatory and it's never going to be mandatory. Fifth Dream today also making the comparison. That's like Reddit. Some of it is a toxic hellhole, but some of it can teach you some shit. That's true. All right. Anyway, let's move on. Let's go to another story here. We're going to hear from you guys and open it up to the town hall of Discord a little later on. But first, Loki.
I swear to God, you know, what is this? 2019, and still we have game developers, you know, setting up their games to have the physics run based on the frame rate. Why? Why are we still doing this in 2019? Apparently that's the situation, though, with Fortnite. So Fortnite on the Switch runs at 30 frames per second. And apparently with that, you know, apparently your guns fire a little bit slower at 30 frames per second versus like the 60 frames per second that you get on PC. So, for example, they took one of the guns and at 30 frames per second, it took 27.52 seconds to unload the whole clip. But at 60 frames per second, they got it to unload the clip in 26.08 seconds. And, of course, you can actually increase that amount, too, with, you know, a higher frame rate if you have it unlocked. So,
isn't that very bad when we've got this cross-platform thing going on?
It is bad, but it's also, it's so, like, you know, I'm assuming it's pretty much similar to other game engines. But, like, I know with, like, Unity and stuff, they have the time delta time stuff, and I think that's part of just most programming languages. And that allows you to, you know, have all of your physics or all of your timing run at a consistent frame rate. Or a consistent rate based, you know, regardless of frame rate. Why you lock it to stupid frame rate is beyond me. I mean, other than, I don't know the reason why you would do that, but here we are, you know, still doing that crap. So I don't know if they're going to fix this stuff, but at the...
Well, I'm sure now that it's been pointed out very much
they said
on social
that,
media.
Yeah, they said that they're aware and they're working on a fix, but they haven't gone into any details of what that's going to be, but... I don't know why they should even be pointed out in the first place. It's dumb. But, like, you know, Fallout 76 did the same shit and even worse. So
it's just mentioned by a chatter, Fifth Dream today in our chat room.
So, and along with that, there is some good news, though. Fortnite is going to be changing the way that they do their loot boxes with this Fortnite Save the World. So, what they're going to be doing now is instead of the loot boxes or loot llamas, basically they're going to. Players will be able to buy them and then open them to find out, you know, what they've received. Apparently, though, the update, the V-Bucks llamas are becoming X-ray llamas. And before buying these new X-ray llamas, you'll be able to see exactly what they're going to receive.
Hmm.
And if players don't like anything in the llama, they can wait until the next day when the contents inside the llama will change.
Mm, that's a pretty clever way to get people to calm down about this a little bit. I kind of like that idea. X-ray llama.
X-ray llama, yeah.
I like that.
And then they're saying, you know, so I guess I mean, that's a neat idea, I guess. It's still going to be kind of random, but you'll be able to see what you're getting.
But you know what random thing you're getting.
Yeah, you can save your V-Bucks or something.
Yeah. Acton Chat says, isn't it still the same, though? It's random? Yes, but it's very different when you know what random assortment you're getting up front. So your purchase isn't random, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
The transaction does not end up being random. There's no gambling involved. I mean, you know what it is you're going to get. It's just what's generated that's random.
Right. And you can only – it'll be different each day, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can purchase like more than one of these or something, and then it'll be – different each time.
You'll have to play more Fortnite to find out.
I'm not spending money on this.
So. I don't think I talked about it during my game of week, because I think it was a couple weeks ago at this point, but no, it was like last week. I went into Fortnite just to like fuck around in there, and I was actually playing with like the little like level editor and build your own thing. So it was kind of, you know, something I was doing, messing around with on Fortnite, trying to get a little more of the creative mode as opposed to like shooting people and that whole thing, because
yeah.
I'm not good at that part. But anyway. All right. Let's see. Deekman says it's also great for data mining exactly what the player base is looking for. Very interesting. They can kind of weigh like what's selling and what's not. Interesting. Because you can't do that with a traditional loot box. Frodo Swaggin says, I wish Rocket League could do that. Well, you know, if it does very well for Fortnite, I'm sure other studios are going to look at that and go, I want to do an X-ray loot box. So we'll see. Anyway, meanwhile, hey, remember PUBG? That was the game everybody was talking about before Fortnite. And there's still a lot of people playing Player Unknown Battlegrounds. I'm being a little silly. But I think this is really cool, like what PUBG is actually doing. So there's a Xbox One event going on with snow sunglasses, and it's a scavenger hunt, basically. So I guess it's a new snow map in Player Unknown Battlegrounds.
Yeah.
So if you are an Xbox One player playing on this map, you're doing a scavenger hunt. So like they're posting a picture like here. And if you respond with a picture of found the spot, here it is, you go here, then the first person to upload that screenshot gets a bonus item, but you can only get that once. So the same person can't get it every time. And there's actually some real life things you can win too. A picnic mat, a PUBG logo eco bag, and a winner chicken leg dinner bag charm, whatever that is.
Neat.
Yeah, I think it's cute. I like that. So I like when they kind of like blend the real world with games and have those kind of like rewards.
They're not offering any of those grease-proof controllers or anything anymore?
Not that I've seen, but stay tuned. All right. It's so nice to hear Rob. This is from Bobby in our chat. It's so nice to actually hear Rob say PUBG, since he said a year ago that he'd never be able to say it and would always say PUGB. I still think the name Pugby is cuter, and if it was a game involving pugs, would be like super duper cute. Somebody posted on my Facebook wall, and I feel like we talked about this game before, but some like shooty game where the cat was the weapon, and you would pet the cat to reload. It's adorable.
I did see that.
Did you see that? Like somebody posted that on my Facebook wall. But
I just assumed the game where you pet the cat and the cat reloaded. I assumed, oh, is that Postal?
Probably.
With the cat silencer?
Probably. Anyway, hopefully they'll give away some pugs in the X-ray. I almost said Xbox pinata. The X-ray pinata. All right. Anyway, let's move on. We got, I think, two more stories, and then we're going to get to Discord. So you might want to start lining up in our Discord room over in the green room.
I got to say, though, if like they had you know how they have all those blind bags and stuff at the stores? If they offered them in pinata form, that might be a little bit more appealing, because then at least you get to beat the crap out of it first to get, you know, the stuff out.
That would be fun.
All right. So let's talk about sales numbers. So the 2018 NPD numbers are out, and they have some more information to share about that. So we saw $3.4 billion spent on games, hardware and accessories, and game cards. And apparently there was a overall growth of 13% over 2017. And then so for hardware, Nintendo Switch sold the most in December and generating the highest dollar sales in the month. And then, of course, along with that, video games hardware sales overall is up 8% to $5.1 billion. And then software-wise, $7.1 billion across all platforms, 7% growth over the year as well. And apparently the highest annual amount since 2012. the top games for 2018, Red Dead Redemption 2, Call of Duty Black Ops 4, and NBA 2K19. Let's see, software charts. So for December, we had Smash Brothers Ultimate number 1, Red Dead Redemption 2, Call of Duty Black Ops 4, Battlefield 5. Those are the top four there.
Look at that, Mario Kart 8 at number 6. Still, that says a lot.
Mario Kart 8 at number 6, Super Mario Party, Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu, and Spider-Man. Overall, of course, I mentioned the top three. Then we had Madden, Smash Brothers Ultimate, number 5 for the entire year.
After one month.
Yeah. Spider-Man, Far Cry 5, God of War, Monster Hunter World, and Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
That's pretty good for Monster Hunter being the number 9 best-selling game all year, when I think for a long time they kind of thought the U.S. didn't get it, so to speak. So I think we're going to see more Monster Hunter games in the future, for sure.
Smash,
more parody.
And talking a little bit more about Smash, so Smash Brothers Ultimate was sold so well that it set a new release month dollar sales record for an exclusive game, beating the last previous record holder, which was Halo Reach in 2010.
Well, sounds like Nintendo had a great year, but it sounds like a lot of games did very well this year. So, you know, and that kind of ties in. I think this is a lot of the same report that was in the very first story we talked about tonight.
Yeah.
It was a huge year for gaming, period. You know, that doesn't really touch on the mobile end of things, but still a very, very good year. Frodo Swaggins in our chat, before we get to our last story here, says, I think Red Dead Redemption 2 Online is going to die. They're not releasing enough content. At a good pace.
I don't. Red Dead Redemption 2 is going to have a problem just because with Grand Theft Auto Online, there's so much you can do with it. Like, you can just go out, and then they've done a lot of that where it's just like wacky shit with it. They've got like a battle royale mode. They have a mode now that's sort of like, what the hell was it? We just talked about it. Sort of like Rocket League. They've got, you know, all sorts of different modes and like racing and stuff you can do in it, but you can't really do that with Red Dead Redemption. You're kind of limited to what exactly you can put in the game. Like, you can't get too weird, I think, with it. And I just don't think we're seeing the appeal that they have with Grand Theft Auto Online. I don't think they're going to get as much of a return on investment that they would hopefully get. I know I'm not really interested in it. I haven't even finished the single-player campaign yet.
Better get to it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, one more story for you guys tonight, and this has to do... Of course, we had to talk about this. I saved it for last, but there was a brand new Dance Dance Revolution game announced this week. So there was the whole...
Solid gold cabinet.
That's right. Solid gold cabinet. It's called DDR Ace 2-0, or A-20, if you want to be very American about it. A-20. But I guess it's actually pronounced Ace 2-0, because last DDR was... Ace, so I guess this is Ace 2.0, something like that. Anyway, lots of people photoshopping the logo to say 420, because if you look at the logo, like, you just have to make one minor little change. It looks like it says DDR 420, which would be a green cabinet, not a gold cabinet. And then I did a really funny tweet. I thought I was being funny, where I photoshopped. It was bad Photoshop. I took out – I actually used, like, the Apple drawing thing on the phone, and I took out the 2, and so it just says 40. So I said, you think I don't remember what I tweeted something like, bitch, I'm too old for DDR. I am Dance Dance Revolution 40. So it was just, you know, like one of those, like, it's hard for me to get excited about new DDR games anymore when I'm out of breath after I play Beat Saber. Anyway, it's not like we have a song list or anything like that. It's just that, hey, the next DDR is a special 20th anniversary edition, a shiny gold cabinet. Coming soon to Japan, of course, you know, we'll wait.
And it is a different cabinet they have. Yes. It's like, it's based off of, like, almost like the Dance Rush cabinets that they have. Mm-hmm. So very slim. The arrows are kind of different, too. So instead of the arrows being colored, they're all gold, and the LED lights underneath are red and blue. And I know that kind of played into the, I guess the way they play is a little bit different, too, because I know that kind of affected some of the Perfect Attack competition that they're doing, that some of the Japanese players are able to adapt to them faster than, you know, the U.S. players. But that was not the only game, though, that they announced. They have other games, too. They have mobile games coming, which is kind of neat. So they've got mobile games for Sound Vortex, for Beatmania 2DX, and for Dance Dance Revolution. And these aren't just like, you know, the mobile phone games you may be thinking of, they're actual, like, it's like you plug in your phone or tablet into a TV, and they have wireless dance mats. So they're going to be selling brand new soft pads. And for all of those who, you know, were growing up with DDR and saw way back in the day when they had on the PlayStation 2 the arcade-style controllers, the ones where they're $1,000 that you could never touch because you couldn't buy them. You can only buy them through Konami style or something like that. Well, they're going to be selling some of those, too.
Oh, wowie.
And so they're going to be available for, I assume, this mobile version as well. They're also they have Bluetooth controllers as well for the 2DX and I think Sound Voltex as well. Very.
I would be so excited neat. If I could play 2DX at home again. Be so good.
But yeah, it looks very cool. I saw like some gameplay of 2DX and stuff, and you can use a touchscreen on there. You can also use the wireless controller. So I'm curious to see how much all that's going to cost. But like, yeah, right. here's a picture like of the actual arcade style controller.
But you can't say that when I can't show it on Sorry. The TVs. We're looking at a picture, but you can't see it. Sorry.
But it looks like
turn your computer it, around. No, I'm just kidding. It's fine.
It looks like
a DDR stage, like a metal stage.
It looks like a solo pad, sort of. With the it looks just like the old arcade style controllers that they had for the PlayStation 2. It's a metal pad with arcade accurate everything. Although this one doesn't have like on the arcade, they actually have like light strips around the whole thing on the bottom, which is kind of cool. But very much like the old PlayStation controllers, but it looks really nice.
Neat.
Except right. I have a cabinet, so I don't really need this crap anymore. But
well, we'll see. We'll see what develops to that. I'm excited about that. You know, even if I joke that I am getting old for DDR, maybe I just need to play more regularly again, and then I could, you know, get fit again playing some DDR. That would be very cool. All right, we are now going to open up the Discord channels for your calls. If you missed last week's show and you don't know how the calls work now, we said goodbye to Skype, and we now open up our Discord server for calls. So here's how it works, and I'm going to explain this a few more weeks, and I probably will explain it less and less and refer you guys all to the pin post. But if you want to call into the show, you just have to be a member of our Discord. It's totally free. You just go to vognetwork.com/Discord, and you join it just like any other Discord server, like where your Pokemon people are raiding or how you're playing an MMO online or whatever. And then if you do want to call into the show tonight, you're going to go to a channel called The Green Room, and you can sit with some other OLR listeners and chat amongst yourselves or test your audio if you want. But please be nice to and respectful to each other. You can sit in there while you wait for us to pull you in. Just – again, due to time, due to resources, due to me usually preferring people that haven't been on the show before, I may not get to everybody. Please do not be butthurt if you are not selected for OLR. I try to get a good sampling. If you want to increase your chances of getting on, tell us a little bit about what you want to call in about over on our Orange Lounge Radio channel so that I know you're prepared. All right. Anyhow, I think that all being said, we're ready to get to some calls. And Loki, you didn't get to experience this last time, right? This is your first time on Discord.
No, I haven't able to experience the wonder that is.
The wonder is Discord. Actually, I think the audio quality is a little better. I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, let's get to it. We are getting to our first caller tonight. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Mel Mayhem. How are you?
Hey, good. Welcome back to OLR. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, as you can see in my message on Discord, as I calling about games seemingly being dumbed down, gradually over the past decade or so.
Tell us a little more about that. Like, obviously the podcast listeners couldn't see your pitch there in the Orange Lounge Radio channel, but yeah, I was kind of curious what your perspective is on this. You feel that games in general have been dumbed down in the past few years? Tell me more about that.
Yeah. Case in point, most of us have grown up with stuff like the original Nintendo or Super Nintendo, stuff like that. And those games, generally speaking, have been brutally hard. Those games never held your hand. They just gave you a flimsy instruction manual. They said, good luck, kind of assume that you're intelligent enough to figure out how to beat the game. I mean, case in point, Mike Tyson's Punch Out.
Sure. Or a game like the old school Mega Man games were very, like, you really had to memorize patterns to get through those games. And it's like, I go back and I play them today, and they're quite difficult to play those games today.
Exactly. to cite an example, Resident Evil, the Evil series, at least the ones on the PlayStation 1. This may not be a great example, but it's a little bit more recent. In order to save your game, you have to use the ink ribbons. Those ink ribbons were in limited supply, so you can't spit damn the series every 30 seconds. You know, now, if every 0.5 seconds, if you want to, you know, save to your heart's desire. You know.
To be fair, though, wasn't the ink ribbon thing kind of fucking annoying? Like, I kind of thought it was annoying even when I was younger, and that was first out. But, I mean, I get it. Like, I get what you're overall trying to say. Like, it feels like, you know, games were, like, really, really hard, and now, you know, there's a lot of, like, easy modes. And but there's folks in our chat room, you know, that kind of like the easy modes. Bobby Blackwolf, you know, he's a fan there. Galley in our chat room over at Twitch TV VOG Network says, I play games to relax, so give me easy mode. Let's see. ActDef says that's probably why I didn't like Mega Man back in the day. Here's the thing. I mean, it seems like I don't know a lot of games that just went like full on easy mode. I mean, maybe they've reapproached some of the design things like the e-ribbon concept you gave. But I even think of like, let's say, okay, the old Mega Man games were really hard. The newer Mega Man games just have a sliding difficulty level. So if you want to play like a really easy level, you can do that and you can get through the game and experience the story and all that stuff. But if you're the type that wants to bang your head on the wall and only have a certain amount of lives before you got to go all the way back to the beginning of the level and so forth, you can kind of do that. So, I mean, I think that's kind of like where the games are at now, is that there's a little bit more of a sliding scale. And I think Metal Mayhem, where a lot of that, I think, probably has to do with accessibility in some ways. And, you know, we talked about how gaming was a very – and this goes back to the very beginning of the show. We started at, you know, 6 o'clock Pacific talking about how, you know, the gaming industry has grown. It's grown and grown, and it's a multi-billion-dollar industry. And now we have politicians going on Twitch feeds to talk about Donkey Kong 64 and these sorts of things that were unheard of several years ago. And I think part of that is because more and more people can understand games and can play games easily. Because for some people, Raginator, and I know for, like, hardcore gamers like you and me, this is sometimes a tough concept to grasp, but, like, with an Xbox controller – if I were to, and I'm pretty sure I did this when I like was showing my mom, you know, when she was still with us, different video games, she'd be like, there's too many buttons on this thing. How do you remember what button this is? There's so many buttons on this stinking thing, right? That's how a lot of people kind of react to controllers.
Right.
But now you can play so many different types of cell phone games just with your finger, just touch, doing very intuitive sorts of things. And I think, I kind of think. That accessibility and the easiness part, I think, also opens up games to more people, because there's a lot of video games out there that are very narrative based. Let's take a game like Mass Effect, for example, that, you know what, some people don't necessarily want to do pew pew shooty shooty. They just want to experience the story. Well, guess what? EA wants that money too. So there's an easier mode in the game. But for those that like the combat and that stuff, you do have that more sliding scale level of difficulty. I feel like you were going to say something, Loki.
Yeah, I was. I was gonna say that, you know, I was kind of on the same side with how, you know, I feel that a lot of games, they had dumbed down, but not necessarily dumbed down. I think it's now that they've added a lot more accessibility to stuff. I know with my kids, you know, trying to get in the games, they wouldn't have the patience to play a harder game like that. If they kept losing at a game, they're just not going to want to play it anymore, because, you know,
there's 5,000 games.
Well,
they can play.
Just like everybody kind of has like ADD when it comes to like just entertainment in general. And if something's going to bring you frustration because it's so hard, then you're just not going to play it. Whereas, remember, when we started playing games, you know, a long time ago, arcade games were kind of the thing that was popular, and you were used to games being hard because they would eat your quarters, and that was the point of the game, was to make money for the arcade. And then you take the home game, and it's slightly easier because, hey, guess what? I don't have to keep paying money to play this game. Yeah, it's insanely hard still, and that could be just because they're porting stuff over from the arcade and they just didn't change anything, or that's just, you know, the attitude that they had. They didn't need to, you know, dumb things down so much. But, and also controls are a lot more simpler then. But I think now, like with all the accessibility options that they have, like with some of the Mario games and stuff that add this like a little bit of easier mode into it, I think it does help people, you know, keeps kids and stuff entertained in the game without getting overly frustrated with it.
And I noticed in our chat room also some folks talking about Celeste. Bobby Blackwolf points out, I also like how Celeste handled the assist mode. They never degraded you for it. They just said, here it is. We'd love for you to try to play first without it, but we understand that may not be the case. We hope you enjoy our game. Here's something else to think about. I'm sorry, Metal Mayhem. I keep talking and don't let you speak, but I'll let you speak after this. Here's something else to think about. Like, you know, if you take more the concept of a game, anybody can get out there and pick up a basketball and try to throw it in the hoop. Anybody can do that. But sometimes the rules get changed a little bit depending on the crowd, right? If you have kids playing, maybe you won't mind so much if they hold on to the ball and don't constantly dribble it, if they do a little bit of traveling. But you know what? I mean, if you want to get elitist about basketball, or, you know, the fact that, you know, it takes a long time to get really good at basketball. Yeah, it does. But the mere concept of basketball, ball in hoop, that's very accessible for everybody. But it takes a lot of time, a lot of practice to get really, really good at basketball so you can do that shit where you fly through the air and do the dunks and all that stuff and get paid millions of dollars to do it in front of an auditorium of screaming fans. But at the end of the day, basketball, and pretty much put any physical sport in there, is really only limited by the cost to buy a ball, to buy the stuff needed to play the game, which even then, I think some people improvise. We're going to play basketball, but we're going to just do it with this bouncy ball that I just kind of had available. Anyway, your thoughts on our response, Metal Mayhem?
Well, accessibility is all well and good, but, you know, sometimes things have done, you know, been, you know, at least in my experience, been done for accessibility. Yeah, it kind of take to a large degree. Like, for example, in the some of the Metal Gear Solid games, something in all of a sudden, you get a bit of dialogue. The colonel may say, "Ah, I see you found this item. To use this item, use the push the quit button."
That's also kind of like the game, just kind of like giving you a tutorial without trying. That's like a game maker and a storyteller can kind of choose. Do they want to just have a little pop-up menu that comes up and says, here's how to control your character. Use the stick to do this. Some games do it that way, but some games kind of choose to do it in a very like tongue-in-cheek way where they have the characters explain it to you. And that's just kind of like a narrative choice on the part of the developers. Anyway, Metal Mayhem, great topic and great question. I am going to let you go so we can get some more calls tonight, but thank you very much. I thought that was a good discussion, if nothing else, on accessibility and games and the difficulty and all that and kind of where we've come, all right?
Yeah, for next night.
Yeah, you too. Take care, buddy. All right. Again, if you would like to call into Orange Lounge Radio, join our Discord. And you sit there in the green room channel, of which there's only one person in there now, and there's about to be zero, and you can give us a call. It really does help, too, to tell us a little bit about what you want to talk about tonight down in our Orange Lounge Radio channel on Discord. But for now, let's get to another call. Hi, you are on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Hey, what's going on? It's Rama.
Hey, Rama. It's always good to hear from you. What's on your mind tonight?
Some stuff besides the fact that I rebuilt my computer in 2 hours today. That was kind of fun.
So. Hey, I was seeing you chat about some of that earlier in the chat room. Congrats on that. That's great.
Thank you. Thank you. It happened Thursday night. I'm like, I'm going to go out, buy a new power supply to get it working. Didn't work. Talked to one of my staffers and, we got my rebuild going. Showed up yesterday. I came home from my trip, put it together. I'm more happy about the fact that I did not have to reinstall Windows or any other application, but that's not why I called.
Yeah, I was going to say, some people speedrun video games, you speedrun computer building, and that's fine. All right, no. In all seriousness, what's on your mind tonight?
In response to earlier talking about cable and digital streaming services, I pay $135 a month for Fios, and that's for their near extreme package that I've been grandfathered in, and a 100 megabit connection. And sometimes I look at the stuff that I DVR and I'm like, do I really need half these channels? But then I realize if I change those channels, I'll lose my HBO and my Showtime that I will watch maybe 4 or 5 times out of the year. And it's like, I kind of want to cut that down because we're kind of getting to the point where cable providers just need to offer you the base package with some base programming and your choice of like four different streaming services you can add to your bill for like $100 a month, you know? It's crazy.
Yeah, sorry. I'm also typing with our trying to multitask, typing with our Twitch room. But yeah, no.
I was kind of more worried about the echo factor. I'm just like, I just rebuilt this machine. We can't have an echo.
No. We hear you fine. You're totally good.
Sweet.
But yeah, it's. I mean, even with like HBO. I mean, HBO is kind of selling their own online service too, right?
Yeah, but here's the thing. You can get all of HBO's content, and I believe access to the state channels for like $17 a month, or you could probably pay a few dollars less a month and get it through your cable provider and just add the app, because the app is no different from the streaming service. It's the same thing. And sometimes if you're lucky, providers will give you, will tell you like for like $20 a month, pick three premium movie packages. And it's like, you can't go wrong with that, you know?
Yeah, I do want to warn you, buddy. The echo is back a little bit, just so you know. We are hearing ourselves echo through, so you're gonna have some more troubleshooting to do, maybe, and some testing. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah, I'll have to try another USB port on my machine. My apologies.
No, it's fine. It happens. That's what happens. Anyway, but I am gonna let you go for now. Everybody, I hope we'll check out Anime Jam Session on Tuesday nights here at VOG Network. Mm.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, take care, buddy.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Bye. All right. And that is that's everybody that wanted to call in so far. I'll give it just a couple more minutes to see if anybody else calls in. But do we have any like last minute stories, other things you want to get to real quick?
Yeah, there's over 500 games on backwards compatibility for Xbox One now.
Nice.
Pretty nice milestone that they've hit. And they're saying 538 titles. And
holy moly.
Yes, they said currently only 33 original Xbox games are backwards compatible.
Hey, better than zero.
This is true. I was trying to see if they had like a count of four of the most popular games on there, but I don't see it. That's too bad.
Oh yeah, that'd be cool to know like which games are being backwards compatible played the most. I bet like the original Red Dead Redemption is way up there. Probably Oblivion.
Oh, here we go. Here's some more of a breakdown. Let's see.
Oh, they actually have some numbers?
Yes. The top most requested. Oh, this is the most requested title. So these are by votes. Black Ops 2, Red Dead Redemption, Elder Scrolls, Skyrim, mostly Call of Duty. So Modern Warfare 2, Modern Warfare 3, World of War, Mass Effect 3, Fallout New Vegas.
I thought the whole trilogy was playable on backwards compatibility.
These are the most requested titles by 2015.
Oh, that's old numbers. Okay.
Franchises fully playable on Xbox One backwards compatibility. Just Cause, Mass Effect, BioShock. Let's see here. Huh. Saints Row.
Hey, you know, you got to give Microsoft credit. That's as Bobby points out in chat over at twitch.tv/VOG Network, do you have to rebuy any of them if you own the original discs? No, you do not.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, very awesome. I hope if Microsoft can kind of keep that messaging going into their next console, I think they're going to win a lot of fans. We'll see.
Yep.
It would be great if Microsoft could be like, hey, because of trademark law and patents, the time on the original PlayStation hardware has run out, so the new Xbox will let you play PlayStation 1 games. I'm totally fanficking. It's not serious, but why not? They sell those.
We bleem now.
They sell those like fakey Nintendo, Super Nintendo, 5. They sell those at like Fry's, and you know, pretty soon people are going to be able to do that with the original PlayStation. So it'd be hilarious if Xbox.
Are we going to have a Soulja Boy Microsoft collab here? Is that what we're doing?
Let's hope not. All right, I'm so sorry I even suggested it. Anything else for last minute stories?
There was it looks like a mod that's being worked on that's trying to put Legend of Zelda into Doom.
Yeah, I kind of saw some. It reminded me of when somebody tried to go the VR route with the original Zelda.
Yeah, like 3D Zelda. Yeah.
And I was like, some things just don't need to be done. No, it does look cool, though. But if I remember right, didn't the guy, like, he started it, but he's not able to finish it? So he's kind of like, here's everything I've got. Hope somebody else will pick it up and finish it.
Yeah, so he's released it. It's the Zelda / Doom mod that's on ModDB. You can go check it out if you want to look at it or finish it or whatever.
All right. Well, it doesn't look like we're getting any other callers in tonight, so I think we will go ahead and kind of wrap up here at Orange Lounge Radio tonight. So I do want to really thank you guys for listening to the show tonight, whether you are watching us live over on our Twitch TV VOG Network channel, or if you were downloading the podcast and listening to this. And if you've just found the show tonight randomly on Twitch, remember we have a whole back library of episodes available in all your favorite podcast places like iTunes and Google Play, probably being the two big ones. So if you like what you heard here at Orange Lounge Radio, we certainly appreciate all the follows and the biddies and all that good stuff, but we really appreciate if you tell a friend or two about the show. Help us spread the word, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we can only have those voices, so many of them heard, unless we get more people here. So you could tell a friend, and that goes a nice long way. A little a tweet or a five-star recommendation on a place like iTunes goes a very, very long way. Loki, great to have you back this week. We missed you this week, but hey, everybody needs a Disneyland vacation once in a while, or some type of vacation.
It's been a long time. It's been like 8 years, or you know, more than 8, 9 years, actually.
Yeah. So do you have any final thoughts for our listeners tonight?
My final thought is I'm going to try to stream more this week. I know I've been kind of slacking on it, but it's been like a combination between just I just don't want to do it at this time, or fighting with hardware, because like it seems like every time I go to stream, it's like something else is broken. What's it going to be today?
Hey, I haven't streamed in like 2 weeks, but that's most of my energy and time has been going into this. So I've been neglecting my personal stream. So I really want to get back. But then Bobby and I are chatting off the side, and it's like, what if we did this new thing and that new thing? And I'm like, it's going to be a long time before I get back to my personal channel. But really exciting stuff on the horizon. It's not a bad thing.
Still trying to get affiliate. Haven't quite hit that yet. But
what are you missing? The followers?
I'm probably missing everything. I don't know.
Just keep at it. You'll get there.
I don't know. But, yeah, it's just it's still not quite there. I definitely don't have the followers yet. I'm just trying to see if I can even see where I'm at here.
I think if you go to the stream summary, I think, is where – see stream summary under analytics. Yeah. That's where you can see on the right side. There should be a section that says path to affiliate. You guys probably scroll down. You're not going to see it yet.
Let's see.
Maybe not.
I know it's somewhere here.
Yeah, it's
maybe
hidden in there.
Maybe a channel here. Oh, here we go. Analytics channel.
I don't know. Anyway, we don't want to bore the listeners. We got to wrap up.
Not there yet. So yeah,
you'll get there. Just keep at it. Keep at it. Your setup is great. As more people discover you, I think you'll have more of a base watching the DDR stuff, especially because it's classic stuff. Anyway. My final thought tonight is I'm going to play some more Beat Saber and clear some more songs, because I had a lot of fun doing that. And that was my way of getting some exercise this week. I also still need to come cameo at your house and on your stream. That's still a thing we need to set up.
Yeah, we do need to do
that. Talking about that. So maybe we'll try to make that happen this week or next. So anyway, thanks again for listening to or watching Orange Lounge Radio, whatever the case may be. We'll be back in 7 days to do it all over again. I know next week is Super Bowl Sunday, so a lot of you are going to be preoccupied, but we will be here because I don't really have a say in football. I don't even know who's doing the halftime show this year. Sometimes I get excited about the concert. I don't even know who's playing this year. And the commercials, they're all posted the day before at this point, so I'm kind of like, whatever, on Super Bowl. So we'll be here, and Loki, I know you're not really a football watcher, so you'll be here too. So
I need I'm at 40 followers. I need 10 more followers to do that, and then an average of 3 viewers in the last 30 days. I'm averaging 2, and then I need more chatters, so we're almost we'll get there.
You'll
I don't care
there.
Whatever, it's fine,
you'll get there. All right. Oh, they say in chat, maroon 5. Oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
maroon, whatever.
They do.
Whoopee. All right. Anyway, sorry to the Maroon 5 fans out there. Anyway, we'll be here Sunday. Bobby will not be here. He does a big gathering. It's a big day for him and his friends, which is the case for a lot of you. We'll still be here producing a new show. If you can't be here live, we hope you will be here live. But if you can't be here live, of course, check the podcast feed next week. Or for those of you that subscribe to our Twitch channels, you can access all the video on demand whenever you want. But the audio, as always, will always be free over on our iTunes listing or Google Play, wherever you find the show. That's it. We're going to wrap up. We'll see you next time in 7 days. We'll do this all over again. Have a great week, everybody, and good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VOGNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or VOG Network.
but you know they were all still true. See you next week.